listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Things on my mind when I wake up. Things all my time trying to take up. If I could save up my money like worry, I'd be a rich man, but sorry would plague much. I done made up the fiction that, I'm a century of a system causing a day rush. Set a stage in a monologue, a play of me and the audience all up in my makeup.
Hey, welcome to the Blackout Tips podcast. Your host, Rod and
Karen.
And we are live on a Sunday morning, man. On a Sunday morning where I feel like people are going to be pretty excited because, I mean, in addition to the return of The Walking Dead tonight, we also have everybody's, like, favorite guest. It's my man Chris Lambert of the Mundane Festival podcast. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. Thanks for coming on, man. You've been making the circuit. You know, I heard you on Medium Popcorn the other day, holding it down. And then, yeah, even though it was on your show, I felt like it was like the JL Covan, Chris Lambert crossover, cause it's about Oscars time to discuss movies and stuff. So you've been doing the rounds, man.
Yeah, man. I'm trying not to, I didn't want to break the cycle with JL, man, cause we've been doing that for like, at least 4 years. And, right. So I reached out to him and, we had a good time. That was it's always a good time when we get together, man. It's like shit, like I don't know, like Primo and Guru in the booth, you know what I'm saying? Like whatever your favorite collaboration is, it's that.
You know what I'm saying? I think it's like the Black Siskel and Ebert, you know, getting together and going yeah. to the movies.
Yeah.
Bliskel and Ebert is what we call them.
Sure thing.
Yeah. And then like also, you know, JL was quitting his podcast and movie reviews and everything that made him who he is today. So it was kind of sad to see. But it was cool to hear him on your show. And I think he may have started Righteous Prick back. I don't know. You know, JL, I just can't picture JL quitting comedy like that because I feel like he's gonna quit like Charles Oakley quit the Knicks, you know, like we'll see a story about him choking out a promoter,
right? And they done did something to him because he done had enough.
Yeah, at the cellar, yeah. And we'll be like, oh man, JL still in the game,
right?
You know,
but you say that sounded about right though, because he was fed up.
I can't picture him just, you know, hanging up the shoes or walking away so clean. You know, that man's too angry to not have an outlet,
right?
Yeah, nah, he ain't gonna quit.
You know, since it is Oscars time, man, I feel like, you know, you've been, talking about movies a lot, and there's a lot of movies to talk about, man. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about some movies today too.
Yeah. And y'all too. Okay. Covered some movies that you and a handful of other people may have seen. Cause I ain't watched none of them.
Yeah. Well, Chris and I reviewed, I think it's what, Hello, My Name is Doris. Mm-hmm. And then we also reviewed La La Land. Mm-hmm. And the La La Land, review for our spoiler movie reviews, really, anytime Chris is on the show, it's like a review, but then it's also, we just have conversations.
Right.
And so we got to talk about, you know, Black shit in Hollywood and, these kind of, the trope of the white artist that's not living his best dream. compared to the Black movies, where the Black movies like, can I just get out the hood? Like, can I get a chance to not get killed in a crack drug deal going wrong? Like, white people movies be like, but I really want to be more of an acoustic guitarist, and I understand that I'm the number one selling electric guitarist on the world, but what I really need to do is, and it's like, okay. So yeah, we talked about all that stuff, man. How's everything been going with you, man?
This year's been going pretty good, man. I did a one day on season 3 of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and yes. I just started working on a movie starring Melissa McCarthy this past week.
Come on, Chris. That's what I'm talking about.
No.
Yeah, young, trying to come up, man. Trying to come up in Trump's
yes.
America.
Yes, we're gonna have to look at you and go Black acting school.
trying to I'm hoping both of them made the cut, but I just feel I gotta have 2 days on this film, and it's really cool, man. It's good to see like the work start to pay off a little bit, and I'm trying to be a little more positive with those endeavors, because you know you could easily say, you know, like, man, yeah, I might not get it, but you know, whatever happens. But it's like I have to start thinking, like, what if I do? Like, what if mm-hmm. what if these things happen? So it just seemed like I've been laying down the groundwork for a long time, and some of these things might pop off this year, man.
And yeah, so I'm so proud of you. And it's one of those things where I look at it like this: even if it quote unquote doesn't pan out the way that you think it does, you don't know who else will look at that, and it opens up other opportunities.
And we need Chris to make it to the point where JL Covan is sub-tweeting and sub-Facebooking about
yes!
these. Like, that should be everybody's goal, is to get enough famous that JL is like, these motherfuckers, like, that's the positivity that
you
I'm trying
Chris
to spread.
And you didn't pick me?
Right. You know? So I need that kind of stuff to happen for all my people, and including JL himself. I feel like
I think JL
would talk shit about himself if he started
JL
getting
like,
successful.
Can you believe they picked me? Out of all the other people in the world, they picked me. I'm right. still mad.
So
I love JL's hilarious.
I need that to keep happening. So you know, I'm rooting for you, man, and that's dope, because I love Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And I love Melissa McCarthy, and in the way that she's been like blowing up with the SNL shit, mm-hmm. people probably gonna be super into her next project.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, and hopefully, if they make a sequel to Ghostbusters, you can get in there.
I want that to happen.
So we can get, you know,
oh, I love you to be in Ghostbusters.
We can get the full cycle of hatred. You know, like, I just need it all to happen, man. So.
I know he'd be the black boy toy.
What's it like? What's it like being on set for something like Kimmy Schmidt, man?
It was kind of surreal, because the first couple of days, like, so when I booked the part, so at first I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it, because I was having drama at my day job, and it was funny where it was like some drama going down, and like they kind of been after me for like the last couple years, and they changed my hours. So they were like, oh, you're going to have to, I used to be off on Monday. They was like, you're going to have to come in every day. And I was like, well, if I come in every day and I'm here early, don't my hours change? And they was like, yeah, you leave at 3:00. And I was like, bet. And so they was like, starting February 1st, you're going to have to come in Monday through Friday. I was like, can we just start it now? And that was like in December, like late December. And that the next day I had an audition for that Melissa McCarthy movie. And so I was like, bet, I get off at 3, the audition's at 5, I'm good. And so I went into the audition, just was another day, did it, forgot about it. And then like a couple weeks after, like the first week of the year, I had an audition for Kimmy Schmidt. And I didn't know how I was going to make the audition because of the time. And they were like, you could just get put on tape and you send it in. So shout out to Aaron Jackson, comedian who lives around the way from me, very funny comic. She put me on tape, and we actually put each other on tape, sent it in, and then 2 days later, I got the part. Like, my manager calls me. I just come out of seeing Hidden Figures, and I was like, oh, this movie was great. I was feeling inspired, and I cried a little bit in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then I get to see all these messages from my manager, and he tells me I got the part, and, like, I lost it in the car, and I called my parents. And I cried on the phone, and because it was just like all the years of just like, you know, like putting in all this work and saying like, damn, is this really worth it? I'm sacrificing all this other stuff, and to just get that look was just dope. And then fast forward to being on the set was like, it was surreal, because you see these people that you see on TV all the time, like Ellie Kemper, who plays Kimmy, Titus. And then, like, I was hoping to see Tina Fey, and she's in there, and she's, like, directing the set. It's like this big church scene, and then you have your little trailers, and you get dressed and everything, and it was pretty fucking...
Now, do you try not to, you know, bug out and, like, oh, my God, look at y'all, y'all so great, you know what I mean?
I just tried to be present, like, cause I was near them. It's like in a big church scene, and it's like, it's probably like a, if I made the cut, it's like a blink and you'll miss me type thing where it's like Kimmy Goes to Church. Like, I think the title of the episode is Kimmy Goes to Church, and it's a black church. So it's going to be pretty, the scene that I was in is pretty funny. I read the script. It's going to be dope. Like, and, it was really cool because I was sitting near them, but not so close to them. And I got to see like all the behind the scenes things. And, like a couple of days before my shoot, it was, the filming, I had a wardrobe fitting, and I was like in like Midtown Manhattan, going to like where all the rich people shop. I forget the area, but it's like a super rich area. And I was walking, and you know, go into one of these big wardrobe trucks. Like when people are filming stuff, they have those big honey wagons and all that. And it was pretty, like, I would walk past them all the time on my way to doing like free bar shows and getting paid in drink tickets, and getting to step in one of those, and they treat you like a king. They treat you really well. They're really nice, and they put you in these suits and stuff, and you go, and it was pretty amazing. I just tried to be present the whole time, just tried to soak it all in, because you never know when the next gig is coming. So.
And dude, when you get these parts, do these people like know anything about your stand up, or do you just like walk in cold and they just, you know what I mean? Like, is it something where they like, oh, we kind of like we know his stand up, or he's been going up more often, or we've been seeing him around, or is it just like, boom, you just go in and straight up off of acting, just nail it?
I think it's just off the acting, and I think maybe they find out a little bit. Like for Kimmy Schmidt, I don't think they knew that I was a comic, but when I went in for the wardrobe fitting for this movie, Can You Ever Forgive Me, it was like, they were like, oh, you're a comic, you're a comedian. I was like, yeah. I was like, oh, cool. Okay. So I guess they probably looked me up. But yeah, it was really, really cool experience, man. And I'm hoping that more of it, pops off. I mean, I submitted like a lot of comics that you probably talked to on the show, like for the half hour for Comedy Central. I felt good about it, but you never know what's going to happen. But I put myself out there, and I didn't try to like make, I'm trying not to be above it all. I was like, look, right. I did this. I submitted. I hope something happens with it. Like, right. And if it doesn't, you know, I was talking about this on my latest episode where like LeBron James, like no bullshit, just like really taught me something where like game seven of the finals, right, like before the game, he was being interviewed and he said, you know, I'm just going to put it all out there and live with the results. Mm. I mean, like that's really all you can do. And in an industry like show business, it's like you just have to be confident in yourself and put yourself out there and kind of have to forget about these auditions. Like I had an audition for the Montreal Comedy Festival. It was my third time, and I hadn't auditioned in 3 years, and that's the most prestigious comedy festival in the world, and it's a rite of passage for all comics that really want to be about it in the industry. And the last time I was there, I was at Stand Up New York, and the last time I was there, I just had a bad set, and they didn't see me for another shit. It was 3 years, and so I went there and handle my business, and so I just went to the scene of the crime and did my thing, and hopefully that pans out too, man. So I'm just trying to be a little more positive, because one of my homegirls told me earlier in the year, we were catching up, and she's like, you're being kind of negative. And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, well, you know what's weird is like negativity, I don't like, I mean, that's certain people's like home, you know what I mean, like their natural disposition is to be negative. And then there's also like the self-protection of it, like if I don't get my hopes up then I can't get hurt. But the problem with a lot of that shit is that that's bullshit. You actually still gonna get hurt when you get rejected. You're still gonna get your hopes up when you get a chance. And there's something inauthentic about like trying to squash that down, and that's not really living either, you know. It's like putting yourself in a cage before somebody else can do it, just so you don't think you have a shot at freedom. And it's like, why would I do that? Like, I'd much rather hope that something positive happens and give my best, and if it doesn't pan out, I can always look back and be like, but I was trying, as opposed to I stopped myself. Because I think a lot of times when people stop themselves, it gives them a certain amount of control where they feel like they can turn around and be like, it was everyone else's fault because, you know, I already knew it was bullshit and that's why I don't even be trying. As opposed to if you try and you don't make it, then it's like, well, they rejected me. They rejected my best effort. I did put my best foot forward and it didn't work out. Like I think that feels more personal to people. But the truth of the matter is, either way, you didn't get it. And one way, by trying, you and allowing yourself to feel, you, I think you become, you get to know yourself better.
Yeah.
As opposed to not trying and then, you know, blaming everything but yourself, you know?
Right. And also, I think when people put themselves out there, it is a learning experience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, as much as they quote unquote claim they want to learn, they don't want to learn. And part of being learned, part of learning is getting hurt. Part of learning is disappointment. Part of learning is sadness. Part of learning is depression. Like this is part of learning also. Everybody always wants to think learning is just this positive thing, but it's not always positive. And like you said, you will learn more about yourself and who you are. And sometimes you will learn that the things that you thought you want, you might not really want them, but you won't know until you try. And a lot of times when things like that happen, it can actually change the direction of your life into something even more, but you won't know it unless you just put yourself out there.
Yeah, rather than sitting back resenting everybody else.
Right.
You know,
just living the dream of
that's trying. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like everybody else is trying, especially in something competitive.
Right.
Everybody trying. So like the worst thing you want to do is kneecap yourself walking out the gate. Like just let me kick myself in the foot and fuck it. Like I'm not going to try. Put it this way. I watched an inspirational documentary yesterday in the theaters right now, and it really made me think about it. I don't know if you guys have heard of Jonathan Wick, Chapter 2.
Yeah.
But he, that was a man that believed in himself. He had an iron will, and even though they gave him impossible tasks, he never shot himself in the foot. There were enough people trying to shoot him all over the place, but he just never gave up and he continued until he accomplished his goals. And that's really what it's about, man. You know, how terrible would that documentary have been if he would have went, it's no way I could kill 300 Russians. Let me just stop. No, you just keep killing until they all dead. That's it.
Yeah, his thing was he gonna kill them. He gonna kill them all.
Kill them all, exactly. And that's how you have to attack life sometimes.
Sometimes you have to. Cause
you have to kill them all. And as things get tougher, you don't worry about killing seven guys in the next room. You worry about killing the next guy. And when you look back, there's seven dead bodies on the ground. Okay, and they should have left you alone. That's what that's what they need to learn.
Right, and it's also one of the things too. I think a lot of people in general, including myself, have to learn how to build self-confidence, and that right there plays a role into how people feel about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about self-confidence, it has to be instilled. Put like this, I got self-confidence as an adult, but people who have always had self-confidence as a child, as they become an adult, you can tell because they walk in the room like, I own this shit, even if they don't, even if they fail.
Look at another testimony from the documentary of John Wick, Chapter 2, Common.
Yeah.
This nigga is in everything, okay? Because he believed. That's it. He, like, his accent that he was supposed to have, I couldn't tell what that shit was. Nobody could tell what that shit was.
It was bad.
It didn't matter.
What was he trying to be?
It was supposed to be speaking, like, Spanish or whatever they speak. Oh, no, he was supposed to be speaking Italian. He was supposed to be speaking Italian.
It was bad.
But it was so, it was, you know, it was just like, you know, it was common. It was still common.
Right.
Buongiorno. You know what I mean? Like,
it was. Been in there with the kids when the teacher be like, when she come in teaching the children like that basic, and you be like, you just learned this, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, which is fine. The point is, he believed in himself.
Yes, he did.
He didn't say, this is probably a part for some white dude to play the Italian dude that is a bodyguard and also like one of the most you know, best hitmen in the world.
They can really fight.
He didn't say I need martial arts training so that I can do these stunts and these scenes with Keanu Reeves, who does have martial arts training.
Right.
He didn't say any. He said, no, I believe in myself. I don't need any of that shit. I'm gonna audition for the part and I'm gonna get it. And he fucking got it. And that's
yes.
a lesson in that too. While other people sat around going, Common sucks and he's a terrible actor and there's no way he can do that accent.
Cashing them checks.
And then they thought those same things about themselves. So they didn't audition. Nigga, that could have been T.I. But T.I. probably thought to himself, I can't do that. You know, like who else could that have been that got that part that went, you know, like Wood Harris probably saw that and went, nah, that's not for me. Common saw that and went, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. That's how you make it. Anyway, welcome to the Blackout Test Podcast. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search the Blackout Test. Leave us 5-star reviews. And if we like them, we'll read them on the show on Saturday when we do our feedback show. The official weapon of the show is
the taser.
And the unofficial sport
is bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme. And today's podcast is actually triple sponsored, guys. Okay, we got a lot of money coming in. The podcast sponsored by Shadow Dog Productions. They haven't hyped this in a while, but they have a very funny solo album, audio play, and it's not found on any album, but the audio play is called Passengers. You can dive into some Rod and Karen comedy for just 99 cents. Check it out on iTunes. It says it's Passengers featuring Jenna Simon. And be sure to pick it up with ratings and comments. Leave them 5 stars. This episode is also brought to you by Bevel. Bevel is the first and only shaving system designed specifically for coarse, curly hair and sensitive skin. Step your shave game up and say goodbye to razor bumps. Check out getbevel.com/TBGWT today and get your first month free. That's getbevel.com, getbevel.com/TBGWT. And lastly, we are brought to you by our newest sponsor, Talkspace. Mm-hmm. Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. Talkspace makes it easy to connect with a licensed therapist handpicked just for you. For as little as $32 a week, using Talkspace, you can text, audio, and video message your therapist and talk about your life. That's what's keeping you up at night and even your annoying coworker. Y'all all got them, okay? And you know it's messing with your mental health. To sign up, go to Talkspace.com/TBGWT. And to show your support for this podcast, use code TBGWT and you get $30 off your first month. That's TBGWT at Talkspace.com/TBGWT. Talkspace, therapy for how we live today. All right, let's get into this news, y'all. Talk about some black actors, okay? Anthony Anderson reveals that his mother taught him oral sex.
What does that mean exactly?
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like on him, or she did it to her, or on some precious shit.
Right. Like. Yeah. But what do you mean?
Has anybody seen the film Antoine Fisher? I'm just joking, guys.
Yes. Oh shit.
Anthony Anderson's mother taught him oral sex. The Blackest Star told Conan O'Brien Wednesday night. I'll just cut to the chase. My mother taught me how to go downtown. When O'Brien looked shocked, Anderson continued, my mama taught me how to eat the cookie. Oral sex, Conan. Oral sex. I was in my early 20s. I just come home from college and we happened to be sitting around in the family room. Not only me, but buddies and their girlfriends. And she not only taught me and my brothers and my boys, but also the women how to do what they needed to do. He explained his mother's very extensive video collection and how she would go into graphic detail as to what was happening on the video and what either me or my brothers and the young lady should be doing. Her motivation was that my father didn't know how to eat pussy. So she said, I'll be damned if I send my 3 boys out in the world not knowing how to do that. So it is my duty as a woman to teach you to do this properly because your daddy didn't know what the hell he was doing. Andy Richter. Oh, go ahead.
So it was like a TED Talk. It wasn't like.
Okay.
I know. She was like, this is my duty. My pussy was not a. I have been deprived. You will not be out here depriving other women. That's hilarious.
What I want to know is if you ever told anyone afterwards, my mom taught me that, says Andy Richter. Anderson laughed, explained, I have. I would actually call my mother on the phone and say, Mama, they don't believe you taught me this. So there you guys go. Anthony Anderson learning from his mama. Black women saving lives one at a time. This also explains why Anthony Anderson's divorce is taking so long.
Come on.
I mean, they were just spotted at an award show together, even though the divorce filing claim months ago. for some reason she just don't want to let that old thing go just yet. Who knows what it could be, is what I'm saying. Who knows? Let's see what else is happening. Prince's music is coming to streaming services on Sunday. Today.
For a day? 24 hours? No.
No, nope. It used to just on Spotify, but now it's coming to all of them.
Particular about his music.
Well, he's dead, and then I think his family wanted the rights to, you know, to get the money from everybody instead of just a title.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Let's see what else is happening. Oh, there's a movie theater where they will not let men in to watch 50 Shades Darker.
Why?
Yeah, that's my question.
Because they want to see if women can control themselves first.
I mean, they've had Magic Mike, two Magic Mikes, you know, that movie was kind of, the first one was kind of fucked up. Didn't he hit her or something?
I didn't watch 50 Shades.
It's like, I saw it.
It was about BDSM from my understanding. Like I said, I didn't read either, but that's what my understanding.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't watch it. So, I mean, it was like peak white people shit for me.
Fuck them for that.
For what?
Not allowing men in there.
Oh, well, yeah, they said it was.
Fucking can't control themselves. What the fuck are you saying?
Well, you know how it is, Karen. You just go in there to watch a movie, and next thing you know, some woman's like trying to rip your pants off and shit because she can't control herself. I mean, it definitely has happened to me before.
Mm-hmm. Woman attacking on every corner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They said people went to the cinema on Friday night, but a message informing men that they could not come in to watch the film was recorded by a staff member at Diamond Cinema in Navan, Ireland. The message, which was played on his phone listening, stated, if you're looking to go to 50 Shades Darker and you're bringing your boyfriend, you better keep lots of space between you. It's on an 18 cert, and I must stress that single men or married men on their own, any unaccompanied males will not be allowed in. So if you are with somebody, y'all gotta keep like the one seat between y'all rule, cause women just gonna be so turned on, they're just gonna have to fuck you right there. You know how these ladies can't control themselves.
That is so stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a good gimmick to get in the paper, but it just seems so stupid. When speaking to the Irish Mirror, Paul Egan, who records the listing for the cinema, said he thought it was better to keep the single men outside at first. He said it might be better to keep the men outside the door until we see if women can control themselves. The film is basically porn for women, going on what the distributors are describing to us. The film was given an 18 certificate and had a budget of 55 million or 44 million euro, which is $15 million than the first movie. Oh yeah, I remember the mass rapings of 50 Shades of Grey the first time. Remember all those men that were violated because women are the ones that have control issues about sex. On Thursday, the A-list actors descended upon London's Leicester Square for UK premiere of the racy romance flick, the second in the big screen adaptations of E.L. James' best-selling erotic novels. So there you guys go.
The fuck? Your job is just to play the goddamn movie.
That money, dog. Right. Like, what you? He's keeping himself from getting that bread. Idiotic.
And my thing is this: did you tell people this online when they purchased their ticket, or y'all don't do that? Everybody just gotta walk up and buy them individual. Like, if I got my fucking ticket in advance, fuck you, bitch. I'm going in here. My ticket paid for.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it said it on that ticket. It said it on the app. You know. That
in February, like one of the worst times of the year for movies,
and like one of the best time for date movies,
right?
Yeah,
like it just makes no sense. Well, anyway, that first movie made $571 million, so they're gonna keep coming out with these. White women love this shit.
Mm-hmm, I told you with the books and things like that. Like the books, so like hotcakes. Because I haven't read anything. From my understanding, depending on where you're coming from, there's a lot of black people that are into BDSM that said it is poorly written and bad. You know, there's a lot of white people that say it's bad. You know, just varies. And I think that I don't have a problem with them. Make your money. And I think as a movie theater, your job is to just play the fucking movie. Like, as long as they're not making any rules or violating any laws or shit like that. And do you know what porn is, dog? Do you know what porn is?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it just seems stupid. Speaking of which, they're trying to make a Scarface remake for 2018. Uh-uh. Yeah.
And I am against this.
It's going to be helmed by the Coen brothers. I couldn't be, I'm typically not a person that's against remakes. I can't possibly see how this would work and be good. You know?
And it's weird that they're doing it.
Right? Like, is it going to be quirky, Scarface? What, you know what I mean? The Coen brothers are known for, like, not having enough brown people in their shit. Now they're going to make a whole movie about an immigrant coming to America and becoming a criminal. Like, maybe not you guys.
Ain't the Coen brothers, did you say that unless it's a different set of brothers, they do better in, like, series?
A different set of siblings. Okay. Those are the Wachowski siblings.
Okay.
But yeah, the Coen brothers did, like,
Fargo.
Yeah, Fargo.
Didn't watch.
Love, yeah, Deadpool. You wouldn't know, Karen, because you don't watch any of the white people stuff.
Mm-mm.
And it's pretty much all exclusively, like, white people shit, to be honest.
And that makes sense, because I just check out. Like I said, some stuff I do watch is all white. Please don't get me wrong. But I've had enough white people. I'm like, oh, okay, you don't include brown people? I don't want to be in your fake reality world. I'm good.
Yeah.
There was an Asian guy in Fargo.
Yeah, I remember that. There you go. Yeah, they no Country for Old Men, True Grit, Big Lebowski.
I think I've seen True Grit. Is that talking about the movie True Grit with the girl? Yeah, I did see that.
Mm-hmm. Fargo. I've seen No Country. I've seen most of these movies. I think I've seen all these movies just about. But
yeah,
I didn't see Inside Llewyn Davis.
Mm-mm.
It was good. It's depressing, but like if you're an artist. Like, that's one of those movies, that movie and Don't Think Twice, like, two of the most recent movies, like, that all artists or creative people should see.
I didn't see Hail Caesar.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you ain't missing anything.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is a TV miniseries, mm-mm. I guess.
Nope. All this stuff sound like it should come in that little small 10-person theater over there on the other side of town that you don't only there for 2 weeks. I'm good.
I would probably go there if I lived there.
He was
and there's nothing wrong with that, baby.
He was a director of Raising Arizona. He was a director on that.
Nah, I enjoyed that. Raising Arizona with, whatchamacallit?
Nick Cage.
Yes. That movie, I enjoyed that movie. That movie was hilarious.
Yeah, Burn After Reading. Didn't we see Burn After Reading?
Probably.
The one with Brad Pitt. Oh, maybe I saw that by myself. Mm-hmm. Like, Brad Pitt was a gym trainer.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one, but people got gifts of that one. I haven't seen that one.
All right. Well, anyway, these white ass motherfuckers are doing the Scarface.
And y'all thing.
It just feels complete. Like, what is this going to end up being?
Y'all going to make a lot of people mad because, not trying to find, there's a lot of niggas, particularly like in music, that love right. this movie.
Right.
They love this fucking movie. They got posters, pictures, right. like they rap MTV about this shit. Right.
Yeah, it was a running joke on MTV Cribs.
Right, so if you fuck around and try to goddamn whitewash or have him being quote unquote not, you know, brown enough.
Well, they already started rewriting the script and I heard it's going to take place in California rather than 1980s Miami, and it's gonna be about like Mexico, like immigrants coming from Mexico rather than Cuba. So it's just, why just leave it alone,
right?
Because that's the other thing, I'm not a person that thinks Scarface is like such a fucking like untouchable classic,
right?
That it's just like it's impossible to make a better version. I think it's a cult classic, like it wasn't necessarily the greatest movie, mm-hmm. but for all the flaws that it had, those were flaws you could have back in that time period.
Right.
Before the think pieces and social media hashtags and shit. And now you do this shit and you fuck it up. It's going to be a lot of angry people, man. Just leave it alone.
Y'all going to, they in for a surprise. They're going to get a lot of backlash on social media from a lot of brown people, that are like, and it might not even be just us brown people, just brown people in general that enjoy this movie that's going to be like, fuck this.
Chris, what did you think about... Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say they did that with Carlito's Way a couple a few years back, and it was just kind of like meh. Like, well, I really don't get it. I'd rather see the Coen brothers make some original shit that they're, you know, that they're pretty much good at, you know, all the time, most of the time, you know.
What'd you think about Nick Cannon's latest special?
I only saw what JL tweeted about it and Instagrammed. It's just not my cup of tea. I saw a little bit of it when I got home on Friday. I was just like, it's just not my cup of tea.
The correct answer is Nick Cannon is hilarious.
I have not.
I like that Gigolo record he did with R. Kelly. I'm not going to front and act like I didn't like that.
I haven't heard that. It's a whole album.
I was back in like 04 or something. You don't remember? I'm a gigolo spinning on my dough. Na, 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 na. Y'all remember that jig? The chat room probably remember it.
I think I got it. I'm gonna play some. Hey, yo, Ray. Yo, what's up? Yo, big C told me you was at
the club. He says, I'm not trying to be your man. Pimp phone. Yo, mama. Yeah, your mama. That hoe is a hoe. Yo, man, you still mess with that? She may be a hoe, but she's my hoe. You know? The hoe is mine. Oh, that's brown sugar. That's Ren and 10.
Sound like it to me. Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon was nearly fired over black card joke.
Black card joke?
Yeah, a black card. Card. Yeah, apparently he has a deal with NBC where he can't be disparaging of America's Got Talent, which he's like the host of, which really lets you know that they don't pay attention to anything else he does. Because I'm like, really, man? Because he be out here saying hotep shit, wearing these weird ass hats.
Oh, but they don't care. Over
talking about Planned Parenthood trying to kill the black family and shit. Y'all, like, if that was Ryan Seacrest, they would have been like, hey, Ryan, what the fuck are you doing, dog? Cut that shit out.
But they assumed that. You know what he's talking about. Oh, I don't understand.
I just think they don't care. They don't keep up with him. He's like, he walks off America Got Talent. And they're like, we'll see him next time America Got Talent comes on. Correct. Well, he did that shit. Well, not that exact thing, but he did something like that on a white platform with Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Cause like, you can go on Hot 97 and be like, you know, these black queens need to listen to us and shit like that. They don't give a fuck. But if you go on Howard Stern, white people actually listen to that shit.
Yes, they do.
So, yeah, he went on there and he made a joke where he said that he's gonna lose. He can lose his black card with his black fans because of his job on America's Got Talent. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, I can't be real if I'm getting, you know, on this show and shit. You know, I almost lost my black card. And he almost lost his job. And
don't even understand what the fuck that means. That's not even goddamn offensive. What the fuck?
Yeah, well, apparently they don't want him talking about any of that shit. All right,
because you said black card. What? Y'all got cards? Oh, no.
He's not allowed to make any comments about NBC without approval from the network. Unfortunately for Cannon, the execs were worried that this was disparaging the network in his comedy special, where he allegedly talks about terminating his contract if he wasn't happy at the network or if he really was bashing the network. However, Cannon and his team must have swooped in and reassured NBC of his loyalty and appreciation for the job, because sources say that NBC execs eventually decided that Cannon's joke was simply that, a joke. The sources also say that
everybody else would have had the luxury or the benefit of being comprehended as a joke.
I don't think anybody else would be stupid enough to say that shit knowing that that's their job.
True.
What comparison we got for that? You get that NBC check, it's like, they said don't talk about it, I ain't talking about it.
Yeah, it's like comedy's kind of like it seems like it's a hobby for him, man. And,
yeah.
I saw like maybe 5 minutes of it, and he said, I think he was in Australia, and he said like nigger, like, 700 times within the five. It's just like it's just like that type of comedy that's like, yeah, I'm gonna say nigger, I'm gonna say this, like, I just don't want to get into it, man. It ain't my cup of tea, and I just hope he doesn't lose his Radio Shack drone commercial money.
Hey, you know what niggas love? Weed and the pussy. Come on now. And then he take a stool and start humping on it.
It's like pandering to white people. It's just not really.
It's like an all white audience. Would you come out blasting niggas 75 times and talking about how niggas love this and that and the other, and Obama's a real nigga and shit? And it's like, well, who is this for?
Yeah,
true. And I guess when I was saying before, I do understand what you're saying about that, but I guess I wasn't offended, so that's completely different. But yeah, when you're dealing with white people in a white audience, they hear black
car. I don't think anybody is, I don't think it's about being offended. He has a contract where they're like, don't talk about this shit. Don't talk about us.
When you're not, just come
do America's Got Talent.
Okay.
Other than that, keep us out of your fucking mouth unless it's already approved, because he is a loose cannon. He is just...
Okay, I'm with you now.
Yeah, and like Chris said, it feels like a hobby. Don't lose your main gig over your hobby, dog. Like,
right, this is some side work you do, dog.
Yeah, like, you can't be making that much from these stand-up specials that you're making from America's Got Talent. Like,
yeah, that's probably your main source of income, dog.
I'm telling you, man, I just don't think they keep up with him outside, because I think if they saw some of the shit that he says outside of that job, they'd be like, yeah, we got to rein him in and tell him to stop talking about some of this shit.
They'd be like, but you didn't say ABC, so we good. I mean, NBC, so we good.
Yeah, you're not going to catch Ryan Seacrest talking like this.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? You're just not, like...
Ryan Seacrest, he is just clean as a slate. He don't talk about shit outside. You probably catch him in his sleep. He probably talking about his job, doing a commercial while he's sleeping.
Yeah, like, you're just not going to catch him slipping like that.
No, you're not.
And specifically not to try to appease an audience that doesn't pay him, you know what I mean?
Right, because he's like, oh, you, I ain't making no money. Mm-mm, don't catch me doing that shit.
Speaking of comedians, the person who heckled George Lopez has been interviewed, and she has some things to say, guys. Mm-hmm. Chris, did you see the video of George telling that woman to get out and shit like that?
I saw like one of those doctored videos where they say, and George Lopez did this. So I didn't see like the full thing, but he told her she heckled him, and he said, get out.
Right.
And he called her a bitch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she stood up with middle fingers when he said that we got two rules in a Latino home. One, never marry a black person. Two, don't park in front of my house. And she stood up and put her middle fingers up. And to her, well, I'll let her explain it, but in the video, you can see, like, she does that, and then he is like, you can't take a joke, sit down, bitch, sit down, then, like, if you can't take a joke, you don't need to be here, get out, and then they kick her and, like, the three people she's with out of the club. Well, she's been interviewed, I guess, by the news or something, and this is after the video goes viral. I'm talking, bitch, you paid to see a show, sit your ass down. You can't take a joke, you're in the wrong motherfucking place, sit your fucking ass down, get the fuck out of here. Eventually, after a few more F-bombs, she's made to leave. In the wake of the video going viral, the internet has lit Lopez up, calling him a racist, while the internet proceeded to cancel Lopez. The woman who found herself in the middle of controversy called in to D.L. Hewley's show to set the record straight. And D.L. Hewley, I think, is a Lopez, like, cool with Lopez. He's cool with a lot of black comics, honestly.
They tour together, I think.
Yeah, so she called in. Her name was Alexis. She said she started a conversation by telling everyone who assumed she felt Lopez was being racist to mind their business. That statement never came out of my mouth. I don't think Lopez is a racist. I wasn't offended. Just want to clear the air, she said. For one, I'm black and Mexican. So when he made that joke and I stood up and gave him the finger, it was not a malicious fuck you. It was a friendly, like, laughing at the joke. And for everybody saying that I was offended, no, you know how many times I've been called a bitch and I'm going to be called a bitch. I was not offended.
Go here.
Look, Karen, she's down with that. Okay. So, I just want to know what her life is like, that she's constantly getting called bitch. So anyway, she went on to explain that she didn't even know Lopez was addressing her until she was escorted out of the venue. Now, if you see the video, it's like, how did you not know it was talking to you?
Yeah, he was talking to her.
Like, he looked you dead in your eyes when you said that bitch. It came from his soul. But in the end, she just wanted to clear the air because people were forming their own opinions and putting words in her mouth about how she felt and what she said and why she stood up in the first place. I will still support him. I will still go see his show. I don't think that he's a sexist or a racist. I understand, like you said on your interview, that a comedy show, nothing is off limit, and I know that, so I wasn't offended. Afterwards, she took the time to address all of the people who had an opinion about the situation. Shut up. You don't know what happened, and don't speak for me. If I don't care, why does anybody else care? She then decided to address George Lopez, saying he doesn't owe her shit, but if he wants to apologize for society so everyone can get off his back, she's all for it. All this backlash is unnecessary. Everybody is making it something and speaking on a situation that doesn't even pertain to them, like, get you some business. And there you got it. Cool. Shout out to Ball Alert for the scoop, the inside scoop. I'll say this much, man. I think what comedy is and stand-up is kind of like a public art. I think phones and stuff have kind of violated some of that space with shit that would normally happen within a comedy club going out to the world, and I don't think everything is really ready for the world to see in a lot of cases. I don't have a problem with her opinion. I really don't have a problem with the way the interaction went down. It felt fucked up because it didn't seem like it was a joke. You know what I mean? It felt like he really was mad at her and really got her kicked out. And like, it didn't seem like, it felt more like Michael Richards calling somebody a nigger than like, you know, Bill Burr going off on the city of, what was it, Philly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it felt less funny and more mean. So, the thing is, when you're, you know, doing comedy, it is for the public consumption. It is for people to judge. You want those same people to look at your act and go, that's funny. You want those same, like, you wouldn't have a problem with someone who saw a clip of you on whatever, on social media, and went, oh God, what a great joke. You know what I mean? But someone saying, oh, this guy's a dick. Then all of a sudden it's like, mind your business, bitch. You ain't got nothing to do with this. So I think that was kind of like, once it's out the bag, you can't control it that way. And then, like I said yesterday, I don't feel like a lot of the social media part was really attached to the interaction.
No.
It was really from a lot of people jumping up to be like, there's nothing to see here. This has nothing to do with her being black or a woman. This is, you know, I saw people being like, y'all listen to Snoop Dogg, but y'all got a problem with him calling her a bitch and shit like that.
That's
and
not it's, the same.
You know, trying to, like, it was just like people went so far to try to be like, everybody who saw that should just be like cool with it, right. You know?
Snoop Dogg's not a goddamn comedian either. Is
yeah.
It?
And then also a club atmosphere, I think, is for your fans who like your comedy, who pay for that shit. She clearly liked it. She clearly pays for it. I don't know that she necessarily liked getting kicked out, but she said she'd go back. Like, she ain't bothered by it because that's his brand. And I said on the show, I don't, and that's one of the reasons I don't, like, have such a strong opinion about him. I'm not really a fan.
Correct.
And a few times I've tuned in, I just felt more like, oh, this isn't for me. Like, this is a whole different culture speaking right now. So I haven't felt this need to like there's no need to boycott or cancel him because I wouldn't, how you gonna boycott something you don't do? Like,
right.
You know, a lot of people that say the, like, I'm gonna cancel this comedian don't participate in going to comedy shows.
Right.
They don't, you know, consume these people's stand up in any way, shape or form. So it's like a harmless boycott where it's easy to say you're gonna cancel somebody that you don't fuck with already. So, like I said, the biggest thing to me was just the people jumping in front of the bullet to be like, no, y'all can't be offended by this. And it's like, how the fuck you gonna tell somebody else, you know, they can't, they see a black woman get called a bitch by this dude to a cheering, applauding audience. It's gonna be a lot of people that's gonna see that and be like, this is fucked up. Cause I know for a fact, when Kramer did that shit and called them dudes niggas and shit, I was like, yeah, fuck him. Like, it wasn't no, well, it's a comedy show. They were heckling and this is one of the things that can happen. And you just need to understand when you pay for a ticket. I didn't have none of them thoughts. I thought he's lucky they don't step on stage and knock his punk ass out, is what I thought.
And that's my whole point. It's funny though, because when dudes heckle dudes at a comedy show, is there a recording of a dude calling another dude a bitch? Is there a recording of this?
It's usually women that heckle the most.
And
it's usually white women.
Right. And so that's when the sexism comes in. And then you have sexism and racism that plays a part in this.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it's like, from my perspective, it's easy for dudes to just dismiss this as it's just comedy being comedy, and you're going to a comedy club as a woman, so you should get expected to be called a bitch. Like, that's not what you're saying, but that's how I feel. When I go into a comedy club, any of my actions that disrupt the show, any of my actions that stop the flow, the comedian has a right to turn around and call me a bitch with no consequences to his actions. Like that's what you're telling me. And I have a problem with that. And my thing is, okay, cool, she don't got a problem with that. But not that funny, I don't care about how she feels about this situation, because once something hits the internet, it is for everybody's consumption to interpret how they want to interpret and to feel how they want to feel about it. And everybody else expresses their feelings about all these other things in various different ways that I don't care anything about. But what I don't do is jump up and tell you that your opinion is wrong. What I don't do is jump up and tell you that your opinion is invalid and you do not have a right to be mad, you do not have a right to be angry, and you do not have a right to feel how you feel. Okay, she don't be mind being called a bitch, but I do. I have a problem with that. You're not gonna call me a bitch at a comedy show and think it's gonna be all good.
Yeah, it's also interesting too, because I think that happens a lot. Like, when somebody is a heckler, it's kind of like all rules are off, you know. And we've had I think it was like Daniel Tosh had that anybody want to rape her or something like that joke, and then he had to apologize for that shit.
Tracy Morgan, Cat Williams. Right. Cat, yeah. Williams didn't apologize though. I think when you go into a comedy club, you're going there to hear the comedian. You're going there and nobody's doing a set thing of like, I'm going to just say all the things that you like. And if you disagree with it, you disagree with it. If you want to walk out, you can walk out.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people, when you go into anything, anytime, like you go to see a movie, you go to a comedy show, basically when you go to a comedy show, you bring in your baggage, you bring in your life to that club, and you're bringing everything. And if somebody says, you could say all these things, and then you say one thing, what do you say, like Mexicans don't like black people or something like that, whatever the thing was. And if she didn't agree with it, she could have gone, I don't agree with that. And she could have kept her mouth shut.
Well, you know what's funny is she wasn't even disagreeing. Like, that's
whatever it was, whatever it was, you can choose to agree with it or not. But when you open yourself up like that, when she stood up, right, put her middle fingers up, you leave yourself susceptible to the comedian saying something up to you.
Right.
I'm not saying what he said was right.
Right. I agree.
Now you can, and I think what people, you interpret that whether you like George Lopez or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually gonna side with the comedian,
because
I know what it's like to be up there. You're on your own. You're up there by yourself with no support, with no net. But you also have to have the experience, and that guy's been doing it 25, probably 30 years, to maybe handle it better. Would I probably, if I had as much time on stage as he had, I'd like to think that I've handled hecklers pretty well, and I could handle it differently. Would I have called her a bitch? Probably not.
Right.
But I think, you know, and then this is other people that weren't there, that were not at the show, that are attaching all this stuff, their baggage, their insecurities. You weren't at the club. None of us were there, and we don't know what the atmosphere is. You had somebody on it's recorded on a phone or whatever it was. And then people debate and argue about it, and they want to cancel George Lopez when they don't even know where to find his TV show. You know what I'm saying? So
the other thing is, like, comedians are a lot like cops in that way. Like, comedians side with each other kind of like regardless. Like, you like people comedians wouldn't do what he did in a lot of cases. Like there's a lot of comics who'd be like, nah, I wouldn't have called her a bitch. I would have had her kicked out of the show or, you know, whatever. Like, you know, she didn't say anything, but, and obviously she's a black woman and, Mexican. He couldn't have known that probably from that one look. He couldn't have known that she was actually being like, oh, fuck you, but in a like cool way and all that shit, you know. And I think his, when you're on stage, a lot of your shit is to bear. His insecurity, I think, kicked in, which was this like, reaction, because I don't think anybody thought of, I don't think, even if you are, you know, quote unquote siding with him, that wasn't a joke, and kicking her out wasn't like the joke, you know what I mean? It was definitely like, get the fuck out of here, everybody in this room needs to be on board with the fuck what I'm saying.
Once the joke comes out, once you say it, it's not yours anymore,
right?
It's the crowd interprets it however they interpret it, however they interpret it, and then they choose, the crowd's going to choose whether to laugh or not.
And what's weird to me, here's the thing that's weird though, right? I would assume when you're workshopping, crafting these jokes, you know certain shit is like, it's funny because it's offensive.
Right.
To me, it felt like the punchline, it felt like the setup for a joke. But the don't bring anyone black, you know, whatever. It felt more like, well, yeah, some people are going to hear this, they're going to rub them the wrong way. He's probably said that joke a whole bunch of times. And to me, it's like, why, like, if someone were to stand up at that point, I guess in the way the joke is written, I wouldn't even see why that would be like such a like, unexpected, like, what the fuck, this bitch, you gotta get the fuck out of here. Like, it just seemed more like whatever, you know. It's like kind of how one of the things not to go to this common example, but one of the things about Patrice O'Neal that was kind of dope was he would throw something offensive out and then get the room back. Like, that was his thing. It was constantly like this ebb and flow of losing the room, bringing the room back, losing the room, bringing the room back. And it was like watching a high wire act, and like, he was a master at saying the thing that everyone disagreed with up front. And as he explained it, you start working into his logic of being like, well, I guess, yeah, women do be doing that shit. Oh yeah, that, you know, and by the end, you're just laughing because you're like, it's like a magic trick. You know,
yeah, it is. I mean, Patrice O'Neal's got an unreleased album where it's out. It's right. Called Unreleased or whatever, where he's arguing with a black woman and he's calling her a bitch. They're having a good time.
Right.
He's talking about eating chicken with her, all that stuff. So it's just a matter of how you do it.
Yeah.
But I don't agree with, I'd have to see it all, but yeah. I would just say that when you say something in a comedy club, it's a reason why the guy on stage, the man or woman, whoever it is being paid so you can hear. I did a show last week where I was closing out a show in the city. And I was talking about all kinds of stuff. I was talking about like money, and we're being worried about money. I said, yeah, I sometimes feel like, you know, I just don't want to feel like I'm Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness. This one woman groaned and she said, oh, I said, really? This is where you draw the line? I said so much other shit. And I mentioned Will Smith in a movie. That, you know,
right.
this is where you get. So you just try to have fun with it. But I mean,
and then you said, kick this cunt out, and they
I kicked her out.
Yeah, well, then,
you know, and I've been in shows where it's like I noticed the crowd was talking a lot in that same show. I was like,
right.
What are you guys? I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It's like a party.
I was like, I don't want. Yeah, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. You guys are talking a little bit too much. I got jokes. You paid to hear jokes. And I said, now you're making me a vice principal.
Mm.
I'm a comedian. I don't want to be a vice principal,
right,
to get you guys to shut up. So I've got these jokes. Let's hear them.
It was wild too, though, because like it didn't. I don't think she said anything. I just think she stood up with the double middle finger. So, you know, people say heckling, but it didn't seem like it. She was stood out to him. I wouldn't have noticed in the clip if he hadn't have like singled her out, to be honest. But here's the other part though. Did you feel that way about like Michael Richardson too? Like, were you like, or Michael Richards.
Michael Richards, yeah. Were they acting like niggas? I don't know.
Right. Well, because they did heckle him, and this was his reaction to being heckled. And then, you know, people walked out and shit, because I think there's a lot more solidarity, quote unquote, in race shit than gender shit. So, like, if it would have been black women and he would have done, like, you bitches, get out, I think less people would have walked. But once it was some nigger shit, then it was like the whole room went, this is across the line. But it's like a similar scenario of they interrupted him, he's on stage with a mic. What's that line of when we go, yeah, this comedian was just out of line?
Well, he handled it wrong. He wasn't really a comedian. That guy's an actor. That a lot of people take up comedy when their acting career fails. Like, they think stand-up comedy is probably one of the lowest art forms, if not the lowest. And it's not really respected until you get to a really high level. And the things that you have to do in order to even get that stage time and all that is, you know, a lot of people aren't built for it. Michael Richards was on a TV show for 9 or 10 years, and he probably wasn't doing much after that. So let me do stand up. I can sell tickets, or people can come see me. And then he did not handle that the right way.
Mm. It ended his career.
Yeah.
My question is, did you watch that and think this? Like, cause like, it's easy, like, watching the Lopez shit is like, well, shit, what was you doing interrupting him? This is like his show. Like, what?
Excuse.
And I told you I wouldn't have called her a bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I would not have called that woman a bitch.
I wouldn't have shot Michael Brown, but I side with the cops who do. You know what I'm saying? Like,
what I'm saying, you can't compare. That's.
I absolutely can't make a comparison. It's a comparison. I just want to clarify. It's a comparison, because I hate when people do this. You can make a comparison to something without saying they're the same. I'm not saying they're equal. I'm saying the logic is very much like, I side with this person because of what they're doing, more so than whether they're right or wrong. Like, if I wouldn't do it, for me, it's very much like, well, shit, I wouldn't do it. Yeah, that seems across the line. But it's like, when you identify with the person, it's very much like, I wouldn't do it, but I understand, and that, so it's okay. You see what I'm saying? Like, to me, it's like, with this Lopez shit, I wouldn't do it, and it seems fucked up. And with the Michael Richardson, I wouldn't do it, it seems fucked up. I don't feel like I need to have their back on anyway, because it's like, one, they don't need me, you know what I'm saying? But then two, like, I do think it was wrong to some degree, you know what I mean? So if I think it was wrong, you know, to some extent, I think it was wrong. I don't think it's like a need to back them up as I say, yeah, that shit was wrong.
I think maybe when you hear me say I side with them, mm-hmm. I have empathy. Maybe I should have said that. I have empathy for both Michael Richards and George Lopez. Mm. I've been in those situations. I've been in those situations in stand-up comedy, not as a cop deciding whether he's going to kill somebody. I've been in those situations where people say something, and you can decide to, do I want to eviscerate this person? Do I want to take this person down? Or do I want to continue to have a good show? Do I want to be a tactician and use this as a learning experience in comedy to better myself and to get this situation handled swiftly? I've watched great comedians deal with this, and I've learned from those situations. So I'm going to say that I have empathy for both those guys. I would not have handled it that way.
Right.
I mean, I can, as somebody who's who practices the art form, I'm looking at it as, I probably shouldn't have handled it that way. Mm. I mean, so I think I have, I can speak on that better than you can in this situation.
No, I agree. I'm not an expert at it at all.
Right.
Go ahead. I just wouldn't have handled it that way. I would not have called that woman a bitch. I probably wouldn't have called those dudes niggers.
Right.
I would have, you know, I'd have just did something else.
Here's the thing, like, though. As an audience member, I am an expert on, like, what I will spend my money on. And what the art is to get people to support it, right? So I think, and this is what I've been saying with the Lopez thing along for the whole time, which is all the people that are threatening to be fed up and all this shit, they're not his audience. So there's no harm that will be done to him via this moment. Like, unless you were already a paying customer of George Lopez and a participant in his comedy world, I don't understand what your outrage would be expected to do to him. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's like when white people say they don't fuck with our show sometimes, and you're like, but you never fucked with our show. So, like, you telling me you'll never listen, am I supposed to, you want me to apologize for some shit I said? I'm not going to. You know, one of the things I do like about the way Lopez handled it is that he didn't apologize. I hate when people apologize and they don't mean it. I hate when people apologize and they really don't feel like they did anything wrong. You know, what he did was for public consumption to a certain extent, and if people are gonna be mad about it, then they get to be mad. Like, everybody doesn't, and I think maybe that's just part of the comedian psyche, but everybody doesn't have to like your shit. Everybody doesn't have to be a fan. Everybody doesn't have to think you're good. Everybody doesn't have to think you're funny. Like, there's so much ego tied up to it that I think it often gets blurred from that side of the stage to the side where we're an audience. Cause essentially the audience decide what's funny, but you don't know many comedians. Like, you don't, everybody knows an unfunny comedian, but nobody knows a comedian that thinks they're unfunny. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other part of this equation I think gets lost, which is, while I'm not an expert on being up on stage, I am an expert on consuming this shit. So,
and so am I. And so right. am I, Rod. And I think when you go into a situation like that, you have to know, like, man, if I speak out or say something in this club, or the attention's going to get thrown on me, and I might get something that I don't like about it. Mm-hmm. I think now, like, you could say, like, you could watch that. You could be somebody thinking about going to see George Lopez, and you could see that interaction. So I don't like how he handled that. I don't think I'm gonna support this guy. I'll spend my money elsewhere. You know, and a lot of times, like, we're so used to having stuff on demand at our beck and call. We can get what we want as soon as we want. Like, when it comes to entertainment, you can't pick and choose that when you go to a comedy club.
Right.
You're there expecting to, the agreement is, when you step into the comedy club, you're going to hear things that you don't normally hear,
right,
in your everyday world. And you want to laugh, or you want to hear something that you never heard before, blah, blah, blah. And if you go into that club and you're like, oh, man, I don't think this person's funny, and you leave. And I know there's a lot of people right. that don't, they may not think I'm funny. They may not like me, but a majority of them do. Most of right. the times that I've been doing it, the people have been laughing. And then sometimes people don't agree, because you say things that may make them think of something. Because sometimes when that happens, it's not a joke anymore. It becomes a statement. It's that thing you said, that statement that you made. No, that's a joke.
And the people that that's why I say it's insecurity as well, because the people that don't agree stick out to the artist's mind. You see what I'm saying? Like, even in that situation, it wasn't even that she disagreed. But that is insecurity. There's, like, whether that might feel like a loaded term, but that's textbook definition of, this one person isn't fucking with my joke. She needs to leave. That's an insecure emotion and reaction, in my opinion, rather than coming from a place of, like, in a rational mind, if you could just disassociate yourself from being on stage for a second. In a rational mind, a room of 300 people and 299 thought it was a great joke. You see what I'm saying? Like, the rational mind is like, well, yeah, I'm not going to get 100%. Fuck them. Fuck it. She don't like that joke. Keep going with my shit. But it is an insecurity part, because you are putting a lot of yourself out there to be on stage and do that shit. And I know with the podcast, negative comments stick out to me way more than positive comments. You know, that's part of my insecurity, you know?
I think when anybody that creates and anybody that's an artist, I think insecurity is inherent. Mm. Like there's like, it's like, that's, I mean, I think that's part of what drives you. I was thinking about one of the best Hall of Fame speeches, NFL Hall of Fame speeches I've heard. Maybe not the most eloquent, but it came from Jerry Rice, and he talked about how fear motivated him to being one of the best football players of all time. I know he did the chicken helmet and all that shit, but still one of the greatest football players of all time. He did. He was so good. I don't even think he really enjoyed playing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just, it goes hand in hand with being a creator. Someone who is a creative, you have that insecurity, and he did lash out. He lashed out in a way, was that like, well, damn. Like, well, did she even say anything?
Yeah, I mean, like I have secondhand embarrassment, kind of. Like, when you talk about empathy and stuff, like, for a creative person that is, to in my opinion, having a bad moment, I feel something in the way of like, damn, man, like, that, like, even as I watched it, I it's impossible to watch that clip and just go, nothing to see here, everything's fine. And it wouldn't have, like, I think, it doesn't get handled that way all the time. So it's like, to then, like I said, it's more about siding with the impetus of that emotion that makes him do that.
Like, what the hell is this?
I just put the Jerry Rice taste mask picture on the so people can know.
You haven't seen that, Karen?
No.
The Popeyes commercial with Jerry Rice?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, he need the money, man. Okay? You don't know what he's spending his money on. If you're gonna be in a chicken commercial, you gotta be the greatest chicken commercial, okay?
Come on, the best of all time.
The best. The fear motivated him to put the chicken in front of his face and coon out, okay? But yeah, man, I think that identifying with that insecurity is one thing, because I think a lot of people have it, especially if you do anything for public consumption. Yes. I identify with that. But I'm gonna be frank with you, dog. I got more control than that. Cause like, there's been plenty of times someone said some sideways shit to me, and my first reaction in my brain was to say some wild shit. But sometimes you have to absorb it in a bit. And the thing is, on stage, you don't really have that time. You know, like, you don't always have the perfect shit to come back with and the perfect way to like make that person look stupid, but still keep everybody laughing. And I think when people see that shit, you know, you see that kind of tactic, there's gonna be people that are turned off by it.
For me, this is how I guess I feel about this. The thing is, for most comedians, they would not have done this, and I think that's my problem. For most comedians, they would not have done this. This particular case sticks out for a reason. It's not sticking out just because. It sticks out for a reason. It's not that comedians don't roast. It's not that comedians don't go at people. But in my opinion, I also, as an audience member, understand tone too.
Right.
And me as an audience member, you know, our motto of the show is nothing's wrong if it's funny. So I've been to tons of comedian shows where they have offensive shit, call women bitch, jokes about a boy. So I understand the concept of comedy and putting a joke out there. We've been in situations where audience members have heckled and the comedian takes control, right, and they turn around and they make us laugh and they make a joke out of it. And you know, and everybody moves on. Most comedians would not responded in that manner. Most would not. Right.
Well, I also think, like, if we were grading it, sometimes you see people handle a heckler and you give them an A, and sometimes you give them an F. Like,
right.
If that's part of the entertainment medium, then the people consuming it will decide if they fuck with that or not, you know?
Right. And so I think, me personally, I have a choice. And to me, his tone made something that he was building up to a punchline. It took it away from the punchline and made it about her, which made it not funny, in my opinion. To me, okay, this is not funny. All of a sudden, her being a bitch, I guarantee you, that was not part of what your routine or what you had wrote out. And then your tone changed where it became visceral, in my opinion. I heard something visceral come out of you and go towards her. And that's why my response is like it is. It's not the fact that you said certain things to her. It's the fact that I have seen enough comedians navigate these situations better. You've been doing this for too long, in my personal opinion, to respond like this. You've been on the stage for years. This is not your first goddamn heckler, in my opinion. You should know how to handle this shit and keep your fucking show moving. And like I said, that's where my problem comes in. And also, like I said, I do have a problem when people think just because you have a comedy show and the comedy has a microphone in his face, he has a free-for-all at the audience. That's not true. And the audience does have a right to respond.
Yeah.
I think he had a bad night.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, I think it's one of comedians' biggest fears. So you don't hear them talk about this. Like, yeah, that was fucked up, man. Shouldn't have did it. Cause like, therefore the grace of God goes on. Like, what if I have that night? What if one night, you know, somebody's like, why didn't you vote for Bernie, nigger? Right after Chris does that joke. And then Chris is just like, man, I will choke your hunky ass in front of, and then it's like, that goes viral, and then it's the, man, comedian Chris Lambert threatens to kill white people and shit.
TMZ, do, do, do.
Right.
Well, I'm not famous enough for that, but like, I've had people say things, you know, like, but it's just,
Well, hold up, if you threaten to kill hunkies, you are gonna be that famous. So, like, that shit will go viral. Hold on, hey, we got a time limit. I gotta go to the next segment, next section. I'm gonna invite you right back on, Chris. Give me 1 second.
All right.
Give me 1 second here, guys. And I will
invite
him back.
That's what I would say. He's a Mama Luke.
He's a Mama Luke. Yeah, right.
Yo, Mook.
A couple words of time.
Okay. Mook.
So you know I'm still.
What? Come here, no brothers up on the wall.
Man, ask Sal, right?
Hey, Sal, how come you got no brothers up on the wall here?
You want brothers on the wall? Get your own place. You can do what you want to do. You can put your brothers and uncles and nieces and nephews, your stepfather, stepmother, whoever you want, you see? But this is my pizzeria. American Italians on the wall only.
Take it easy,
huh? And you, don't start with me today.
Well, yeah, that might be fine, Sal, but you own this. Rarely do I see any American Italians eating in here. All I see is black folks. So since we spend,
you guys hear me?
Yep. We back. All right.
Okay. Yeah, we hear you. And I understand your perspective. And
not me. He's an Uncle Tom Coon.
No, he's not.
All right.
I understand your perspective and where you're coming from as far as being on the stage and things like that. I think my part, and like I said, because I'm an audience member, I'm not a professional comedian, is that I disagree with you for the fact that I just thought that it's, to me, that was more than a quote unquote bad night.
Let me flip this shit. Okay. I'm about to blow everybody's mind. Right. So you know how I said, being on stage as a comedian or having a public outlet as an artist, one of your biggest fears is that insecurity kind of overtaking you in that moment and maybe doing some shit out of character, you know, cause I don't know that this is in character with George Lopez, cause I'm like, how the fuck would we have not seen this before? People would have been putting this out every night. Like,
yes, they would've.
This nigga calling people bitches and kicking them out. Like,
been,
you know,
when in the age of the internet, if this was something that people did all the time, we would.
Yeah. Like, cause people want them clicks, right? So they would have been put it out. It's obviously not. I don't think it's routine, right?
Mm-mm.
Here's my thing though, Karen, right? That's his big insecurity and we saw it on the world, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons that specifically black women are having a very emotional reaction to this, being called a bitch is one of the black women's biggest insecurities because so many black women go out of their way to avoid the angry black woman stereotype that the idea of calling them a bitch is not going to roll off their back, and just seeing it's a visceral reaction the same way that I'm sure a comedian seeing a heckler is somewhat of a visceral reaction of like, motherfucker, sit your ass down. They paid for me to do this. Like, the ego is there too. There's also the ego of, regardless of the situation, calling a black woman a bitch for a lot of black women is not going to be treated with this, well, she was kind of being a bitch. Like, no, you're not going to get that reaction. You're going to get a lot of like, who the fuck you think you calling a bitch, blah, blah, blah. So just on the, like, on the whole, it's just like a microcosm of people's insecurities, like combining into this like Voltron of fucking like viral video.
And I will admit that, like, I like for me, I will admit that that's why I feel strongly and passionate about how I feel.
Yeah,
and
remember Don Imus when he called them women nappy headed hoes for playing basketball? Remember that? And it, but we, and people went through the same shit. Like, well, if Snoop Dogg would have said it, and like, no, nigga, shut up. Like, it's a lot of people's insecurity at the same time. It's white people's insecurity about even talking about race and quote unquote accidentally saying something racist. And then it's also black people, a lot of black women's fear of this. You're not attractive. Something's wrong with your hair. You know, like, it's that kind of shit. Like, your body is something to be critiqued. And when it all comes together, I think it's interesting to see people like, react to it, because it is visceral. I don't think it's thought out. It's very emotional. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to be an academic about something that fucks with you so hard.
Right. And in that case, you have two people, well, groups of quote unquote groups of people that have insecurities and visceral reactions to these insecurities.
Right.
And that's how you get in this situation. And the thing is, even more bigger than that, and we kind of talked about this, what's bigger is not what he said and not how he responded. What's bigger is how niggas responded.
How they try to defend it.
And niggas came out and defended it. And that's why you get such visceral reactions. Go, motherfucker, why are you defending somebody that you probably didn't buy a ticket to his fucking show? Get the fuck out of here. I got the right to be mad.
They'll defend anything that attacks black women for the vast majority of shit, you know.
Right.
It's just like, you know. Oh, go ahead.
Like I said, I don't like the way that he handled it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what it's like to be up there. I know what it's like to be in the crowd. I've also been audience members. I've been audience members in shows, a music concert where I'm watching this guy open for this singer, and he's pouring his heart out, and there's a guy talking on the cell phone. I wanted to choke the shit out of the guy talking on the cell phone. I bombed in front of Bruce opening for Bruce this summer. I wanted to choke the shit out of the guy. This guy's like, oh, I didn't like his, he had on New Balance. I didn't like his sneakers. He was talking shit about me after I got off stage. And I was like, you know, I was questioning myself. Like, should I be fucking doing comedy? Yada, yada, yada. And then but the thing is, I had a bad night. That was 5-6 shows. One of them didn't go well. I felt bad about that, but I got back on stage. I think the guy, he had a bad night.
Mm-hmm.
And people, like, when you have these situations, like I said before, people bring their baggage, their insecurities. They bring that and into the Twitter debate, into social media.
Yeah. So,
I
think that works both ways too. You know, like, people also bring the insecurity of, what if it was me up there? Damn, I can't call black women bitches no more. Jesus. Like, you know, like, there's a whole contingent of people that just only spoke up to the fact of, like, why y'all get mad at calling a black woman a bitch? You know what I mean? Like, there's that shit too. Like, they're insecure because they traffic in that. Like, why? So that's wrong.
Let me get this one thing clear.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, I'm not saying that the guy should have, I wouldn't call no black woman a bitch. I just wouldn't do it.
Oh, no, it's clear. Okay, it's clear. Yeah, I don't think.
I just want to make sure that's clear. Whether you guys in the chat room agree with me or disagree with what I said about this.
I guess maybe it's the way I'm viewing this conversation. I don't see it as really a disagreement, to be honest. Mm-mm. Because I think we're all kind of saying the same shit, which is not the way that I would have handled it, not the best way to handle it. Mm-mm. At the same time, not really, his comedy's not really for my shit anyway. So I don't have a boycott, cancel, let's find this man, let's, no. Like, I don't have any of that, cause it's like, the only anger I really have in the situation is just people who, are saying shit like, well, y'all listen to rap, but y'all mad at him, and shit like that, where I'm like, what's wrong with just being like, yeah, he could have handled that better. You know, like, yeah. why would that hurt so much to admit for a lot of people? And I'm not saying you're one of these people, Chris.
Right.
I'm saying, why was that a reaction that so many people had rather than, I've seen people handle that better. That, you know, as Chris said, that was a bad night. That was a bad incident, whatever. It feels like people don't even want to give that much because somehow that would be a loss to say, that's not the best way to handle that.
Right. And that's true. And I do understand that comedians are, emotional creatures just like everybody else. And I guess from my perspective, and I will admit, for me, I'm extra sensitive. You can't have off nights. You can't have nights where you're not 100% on point. You can't get tired. You can't get exhausted. You can't quote unquote not respond the right way that everybody think you should have responded. But I guess for me as an audience member, maybe I hold comedians or certain comedians up to a higher standard. I'm going, well, you've been doing this shit for years. Like, it ain't your first, you know, time mm-hmm. you've ever been heckled. So in my mind, I'm like, you didn't have to do
well,
this.
Well, you know what's funny? Like I said, you have to admit that a line was crossed because it wouldn't have gone viral if it wasn't. Like,
true.
It's like, it's just, nobody would care if it really was something that happened every day. We would all be like, yeah, obviously nobody, that's so, you went to a comedy show. The other part is, I think people are excusing her quote unquote heckling because they feel like his offense was worse. When you wouldn't go to a show and do what she did.
Nope.
There's some people that go to the show and they think they like part of the show and they're quote unquote helping the comedian.
Oh, no, I don't do
and
that.
And we, you know, we highly discourage that. Like, we talk about that when we have friends where we're like fans and stuff. We're like, hey, y'all about to go see Chris Lambert go to his special. Hey, don't be fucking talking. Don't be on your phone. Don't be rude. Heckling him. Like, don't, cause that shit is not part of our brand. Mm-mm. You're not helping the show. No. Go fucking enjoy being an audience member. Right. Like, when we saw, Roy Wood Jr., we've seen, mm-hmm. J.L. Covan.
Hilarious.
We've seen, Marazio Vance. Whoa. Like, we've seen, Mike Lawrence. And the thing is, they have a craft. They have an art. I respect it. They're doing something that's really fucking difficult to make a room full of different people laugh at the same shit for however long they're up there. So, it's not about disrespect to the craft or anything like that. Just, you know, it's go enjoy it and consume it the way it's meant to be consumed.
Right.
When she stood up with the middle fingers, okay. There's a lot of people that are like, I wouldn't have done that.
Right.
I think what we're talking about is like two things happen at the same time. It's almost like a fucking one of those memes on Facebook where people start fighting with each other because it's degrees of wrong and shit. Mm-hmm. I think people are like, yeah, she was wrong for that. You know, that's not, she shouldn't do that. He's a professional in the situation. He can handle it better than that.
And I think
everybody is saying the same shit, but just people are kind of like, well, not everybody, but a lot of us are saying the same shit and getting caught up on the like minutia of the conversation rather than the bigger picture, which is, everybody's insecurities are at play when you see a video like this.
Right, and I think that's why I feel the way I feel. From my perspective, I'm going, you're the professional. They're coming to see you, and as a comedian, you literally control the flow and the atmosphere of how the show goes.
Right. Like, we've done how many episodes? Like, a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people, you can go through all this shit. I ain't never joked around calling Karen no bitch.
Mm-mm.
on the show, because I recognize that is a that's a thing that she would have an issue with. Like,
yeah, that, you know, it's hurtful, and like it's
exactly
just, it's yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It's because when I saw it pop off, what was it, like Thursday? It was like maybe Friday,
last week,
or Friday,
yeah.
Something like And I was like, oh shit, this gonna be some shit.
Dog, my first thing, I saw the video first thing that morning and went, yeah, that's gonna be a problem. I did not think about it again or click. I didn't even think it needed to be explained. Honestly, I was like, she shouldn't have heckled. He shouldn't have reacted that way. I think 99% of people that see the video can at least agree on
that both parties were wrong.
That, yeah, like to some extent, this, like, it's an incident that should have never had to happen. And, instead it went to like by the time I logged back on after basketball, it was like, this is what's wrong with the Latino community and y'all's anti-blackness. I mean, they do have it, but
that's true.
That joke was just, it's still a joke. You're still at a comedy show.
Right.
You know, if I'm at a comedy show and it's like, my mama said, if she can't use your comb, don't bring her home to a black audience, they're going to laugh because it was meant for those people in that fucking audience.
Right.
But if they put that on the internet, it goes, Rod is an anti-black, anti-white, racist, comedian and shit like that. So, you know, I recognized all that from the first time I saw it and went, this probably doesn't need to be explained. Like all the things that collided to make this a problem. But here we are 4 days later still talking about it because it did have to be explained because so many people got triggered by that shit just for
and
that
it's the
own
climate.
Reason.
You're absolutely right, because it's the climate that we're in this country. And
right.
There's a lot of like unrest and there's a lot of people that are hurting right now, and rightfully so. I mean, and you come to their main priority when you go to a comedy club is it's supposed to be a place of respite,
right?
Where you can laugh at stuff that's going on. So it's unfortunate that happened.
Did you see the boss of human? Did you see the boss of headline that was like deport? No. George Lopez, and I was like, this is all, you can't be outraged at this and then do that. Like, you can't have it both ways. You're doing the same shit. It's like, oh, he got an anti-black vote. He got an anti-black joke. Send him back to Mexico. You're like, nigga, you are adding to the problem.
Right. And he might
I used to follow Bossup and I don't anymore. Cause one time on Twitter, this was like years ago. I said some kind of joke about Chris Brown, and I made the boss of Twitter handle say, whoa, you went too far.
I
don't remember what it was. I don't remember what it was, but they were like, whoa, buddy. Wow.
Holy shit.
Slow your horses there, guys.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. That's a line that we wouldn't even cross.
I don't remember what I said.
Oh, man.
You know you have gone too far. And to go back to something that Chris had said, we are actually in agreement. I don't disagree with you. People can have off day.
Okay. Yeah, you did kind of say that. I was just letting it slide. Just like, you cannot have a bad night.
No.
He do this every night. I was
right.
Like, I don't know.
I was
if
like,
that's...
you're a professional. And I guess for me,
like, I don't know if that's...
you a professional.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know if that's, well, that's true that it's happening
it's,
every night, but I completely understand.
Thing, like, yeah, like, I've been doing, like, live shit since I was a kid and at different levels, but there's times where you don't feel like performing. But you have to do it, whether it's like you're in the school play, whether you're like people you're on you're doing a storefront theater in Chicago, whether you're on Broadway or whatever. But you have there's times where you have to perform and you have to deliver because people paid. They don't give a fuck about what TV show you were on,
right?
What kind of credits you have. They know that they got a babysitter. They paid $50 to come see you. And they went, I took their girl out to dinner, took their husband out to dinner, and they coming for some jokes, and you better be funny or you better deliver. Like, I watched one of my best friends from grad school go up. He's doing this play on Broadway called Pierre, the Great Comet, and Josh Groban is one of the stars of it, and he's the understudy for Josh Groban, and Josh Groban got sick. And my boy went on and ripped that shit. And it's like, you you're in a constant state of like, you have to be ready. Like you have to be ready all the time. And nobody cares. Like there's like hundreds of people spend like all this money to go see these productions, these Broadway plays. And you have to be, you just gotta be ready. There's so much pressure that goes on. And that's why when you get to that level, you do get paid a lot. And it's just, but you're human too. And then you get those luxuries, but you gotta be ready. And it's like, and when we talk about insecurity has been a big thing that's come up in this conversation. And I listened to one of my all time favorite comics, Bill Burr, say like he had to fall back because he admittedly says that was an angry person, or he is, he has like hair trigger temper. And sometimes an audience member could say something, they could be agreeing with you, and then they could be agreeing with him, and he'd say, "What the fuck do you mean?" And they're just agreeing. It's like, I got to fall back. Right. Like it's a constant, you're in a constant state, especially being a comedian. And what I've been working on for the last few years is just being present. Like you have the jokes and the jokes are there, but you have to be present and you have to be in the moment. If something is happening, if a plate falls in the club, you probably should address it. Right. Like you can't have your blind. The way that I'm trying to do my material, the way that I'm attempting to be is being me on stage, a heightened version of me, and trying to relay that and make the shit that I've experienced relatable to an audience, all people. Right. And you know, it's a hard thing, and it's just like about being present and being. So I'm feeling this way. Let me check myself before this lady did this thing. She didn't agree with what I said. Maybe you can go in and investigate to see why. Maybe something happens that will never happen again. And it could be the most beautiful fucking thing in the world that you'll never get back to.
Yeah.
And it's that experience that you have with that audience. And I think now, it's kind of a shame that's kind of slowly getting taken away.
Well, with the internet and cell phones and shit, like, I just think the club is no longer the intimate experience that it used to be.
No,
and you know, for the record, I don't think George Lopez would say he had a bad night or it was a bad moment. He seems pretty unrepentant about it.
Correct.
Even though at this point, it would be very difficult to say he wasn't wrong, because his thing was like, if you don't want to laugh, get the fuck out. And she's like, I was laughing. I'm a fan. I'm surprised you kicked me out. I'm not even mad that you did. Like, she that much of a fan, you know, maybe he's moved on and doesn't even think about it. But, you know, I would imagine that if he were privy to that, he'd probably feel a little bit bad now. You know what I mean? Like, well, damn.
Maybe,
you know, like I totally misread that situation, and it's because I had that Hulk in me, man. It just came out. That being said, he's not apologizing. He don't feel bad. Fine, fuck it. I don't have to feel bad for him.
I don't, you know.
And for the record, I don't really think he that funny, and I don't go see his shit. So, to me, it don't bother me to say bye. You know, I think. Like, we had a fan writer yesterday, like, should I not go to the show? I'm like, if you think that nigga funny, why would you not go?
You know what I mean? Like, and have a good time with your wife,
like,
sir.
Yeah, don't listen to all these people talking about canceling shit that they don't fuck with. You know, it's like the New Yorkers not supporting Chick-fil-A. Y'all have one. Who gives a fuck what you think?
Come on now. You ain't got one every corner like we do down here. It's not the same.
Like, it's different. It's different. You're not actually making an action to do that. Mm-hmm. Like,
you ain't got to go out your way. You never cross it during your daily commute.
Yeah, like, it's more of a statement when people say that shit and they live in a place with 12 Chick-fil-A's. Like, that motherfucker right there, they making a statement with their dollars. They were spending X amount of dollars and now they're not. I'm not giving you credit for some shit you know, I'll cancel him. I'm not going to any of his shit. It's like, were you going before? No. I can't really like give you so much credit for something you weren't going to do.
Right. And even though even though, you know, I feel the way I do, I'm not telling people not to go to a show. I'm not telling people not to support him. I'm not saying, you know, cause he has the right as a comedian to still do the things that he does.
I mean, look, if people will pay for it, it's not even about rights. If people will pay for it, that's what you like. That's your job. That's the only thing that matters. The reason we can talk like we talk on our show is because people pay for this and it's the only thing that matters. You know what I mean? Like, I don't ever feel like we have to pull punches on our show because I'm not waiting for some network to pick us up. I'm not waiting to get a certain guest. Nope. I'm not hoping that so-and-so doesn't hear this and get mad because I don't have to worry about that shit. And there's a certain amount of freedom to that I love. And I think the same thing for that dude's art. It works both ways. It's when Glenn Beck is saying some crazy shit and we're like, that's racist, he can do it. They're supporting him. Like, he don't have to worry about you. You know? So anyway, let's move on, guys. We've talked about this enough. Let's go to what's really the problem in America. And that's fucking with black people. All right, guys. Just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. It's time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game we go all around the globe. We find different articles make us feel fucked with, and we score them from 0 to 100 intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. That's right. Donnie McClurkin. You guys know who he is?
Yep, we fall yep. down, but you get up.
Well, he says Christians need to stop protesting Donald Trump and start praying instead. Mm-mm. The job of the church is to pray that he succeeds.
No, sir.
We need to know what our vote really means and how to utilize it, but I don't want us to get caught up in this protest. The gospel singer and pastor of the Perfecting Faith Church in Freeport, New York said on the syndicated radio show Get Up Mornings with Erica Campbell. The protests do nothing but rile people up. It causes people anger to rise up, and it gives us a false sense of involvement. He says,
"Is that false sense?"
The true sense of involvement is at the voting booth. However, Campbell disagreed with the sentiments that protesting is meaningless. The syndicated radio show host who got her start singing in Mary Mary insisted that protesting captures the attention of the necessary people. It stops their progress. It makes the police have to respond, and they have to spend money, and they have to clear the streets, and they have to organize, she said, so it makes them pay a little more attention. However, McClurkin insisted that the only money being spent in those situations were taxpayer dollars, while the pastor said, and We Fall Down singer insisted that he didn't vote for Trump because of his lack of policy, misogynistic ideals, and racism. He called for Christians to deal with Trump's presidency with prayer instead of protest.
A nigga, faith without works is dead. I don't care how much you pray and get down on your face. If you don't get out there and do work and do actions, it's fruitless. It's 100% fruitless. And that's why I said, when niggas talk about Martin Luther King, they act like this nigger didn't disrupt. They act like he didn't protest. They act like he didn't do shit to get attention. He purposely and strategically did shit. They act like he didn't get tacked on the bridge with dogs. Like the nigga did shit to force America to look. So reason why people protest is to force America to look, because the way this country works, if you don't force white people to look and be like, damn, them niggas is really mad about something, they can do that, but it has to get to the point where they go, well, damn, now they fucking up my I can't get my frappuccino now, I can't get to the theater now, I can't pick up my child from daycare now. You have to make shit so fucking inconvenient for them that they go, well, goddamn police, quit beating up the goddamn niggers and allow us to go on about our lives. We don't really care about them, but they're so angry and they're so up in arms. I'm tired of going to the Starbucks, looking out my window. I want to see a sunny day, and I got these niggers with these signs on my Black Lives Matter. I really don't give a fuck about them or them signs, but I'm inconvenienced, and because I'm inconvenienced, y'all need to stop what you're doing. That's how this country fucking works. So for you to turn around and say this is very, very insulting, it's very insulting to Christians who actually love black people and care about black people from all races and actually all religions that are quote unquote actually praying about this thing, but they're actually out in the streets too.
Yeah, it's a false ultimatum.
Right.
Yeah, you can be marching and praying. I mean, if that's the thing.
Yep.
Go ahead.
It's a 100. I mean, it's, I don't know what, I mean, the people, he's a product of all those the protests and sacrifices that people made, that what Karen was just talking about.
The black church used to be integral in that process, in that revolution.
It was the only way to meet. You're like, you couldn't talk about anything.
I mean, all those leaders were preachers too, and they almost had to be back then, you know? Like, there's a reason it's Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr., Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Al Sharpton. Like, all these people had to be church leaders to galvanize the people. And here this nigga is a leader in this, in faith, going, yeah, y'all niggas just need to pray on it and stop, like, interrupting traffic.
And what you're doing, to an extent, you're stifling progression. Like when you say this, you don't know what member of your congregation might be the next person to cause a revolution in your area, because you say you're in New York. Don't you think Christian people were protesting fucking stop and frisk? Don't you think people up there saying, hey, people are dying in the street, this fucking shit has got to stop? Christians were out there too, not just these quote unquote sinners and these people that you don't even really consider when you make these sweeping statements. I guarantee you, you're not considering LGBTQ members of your church. You're not considered biracial. Like, you're not considering any people across the board that are affected in your congregation. They're mad, they're angry, and they want to do something other than pray.
He's affected by it.
Right.
He says, now is our time to pray for him. This is the job of the church. Let the world protest, but the job of the church now is to go into prayer and pray that, number one, he succeeds, because if he fails, we have to deal with the consequences as a nation. He said, before quoting Second Chronicles. This must be a heathen website. Second Chronicles 7:14. America is in a place that has never been before, and the Christian has got to be who God has called us to be. While Campbell didn't totally agree with her friend McClurk, and her sister, fellow gospel singer Tina Campbell, sang a different tune by writing an open letter to Trump that she shared on social media last week. Here's the thing that I'll say, okay? I think at best, people like Donnie McClurkin are stupid and scary as Christians, because they're leaders in these areas. They have followings, their words have impact, and very often they seem to be representative of either a silent group of people that really agree with them but act like they don't, or they're being put in these leadership positions, and those people that don't agree with them are too scared to be like, get the fuck out. You're not, like, we won't be attending your concerts. You won't be speaking at our churches. Like, somehow people keep propping these guys up, but I, as an atheist on the outside of this, am supposed to look at this organization and not feel like these people are dangerous and in control. But these are the people that are the voices. You know, like, this isn't a situation of some guy with some random, I've heard of Donnie McClurkin my whole fucking life. You know, now some of us, because of his struggles, you know, coming out and going back in and staying in the closet and all that shit. But I still heard him my whole life. He's been given a platform my whole life. The other thing is, that's the best case scenario. It's just that he's dumb and hadn't thought this through, and maybe it doesn't represent a lot of people. The worst case scenario is there's a lot of Christians that fuck with Donald Trump because there's some things Donald Trump is about that, black or white, there are Christians that are about that.
Right.
They're okay with their erasing Planned Parenthood because they think they think abortion is killing a kid, and basically they're against all people that provide abortion on any level for anybody. So they've decided that if Donald Trump will get rid of that, I'm cool with that. They don't like Muslims, and a lot of them think the subjugation of Muslims is somehow positive for Christianity. You know, that we're winning the war when we kick these people out of our country and we, you know, make life for them miserable here, then Christians are quote unquote winning our kingdom on earth. There's, you know, a lot of the stuff against LGBT people. How many black Christians just in the last, he's only been in the White House, what, 3 weeks? How many prominent black Christians in the last few weeks have just come out and said some shit like, well, I'm glad Obama's out of there. I don't want no more rainbows on the White House, or y'all let him do that gay stuff in there. Like, that is scary as fuck, especially as a black person, because I'm like, y'all know what oppression is, and y'all know the cost that it's gonna have on our black community, and y'all don't care because y'all can get a couple things accomplished that in your mind you've decided is our God's work. You think bigotry is God's work. You think the spread of bigotry is God's work. There's no other way to equate that. Like, you're not a good person. You think that making LGBT people rolling their rights back is God's work. That's what the Lord will want. You think the Lord will want Muslims to be prosecuted and persecuted, and you think the Lord wouldn't want Muslims let into America, into this country you swear is so great and such a melting pot. You think the women's access to choice is like that needs to be taken away because that's what the Lord would want. You're fucking evil. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not required to think that you're a good person because you put the name Christ in Christian, and I'm supposed to go, well, obviously they got the right. No, you do evil shit. Like, you, like, how is that any different from a fucking Nazi or the bad guy in a fucking movie? We would all be like, that's the bad guy. But because you put a cross on your chest, I'm supposed to be like, oh, well, it's cool then. You know, I'm supposed to feel like your views aren't representative when these are the people that are the most fucking vocal, and there seems to be no voice against them that's silent, that says, shut the fuck up, you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand how I'm supposed to look at this nigga and feel like this is okay. And what the fuck are you praying for him for? Like, what success of his is a success for Christ in your mind? Is it his immigration policy? Is it him being against Planned Parenthood? Is it his national stop and frisk policy? Is it, you know what I mean? Like, what's the policy that's supposed to help? Is it, like, is it rolling back LGBT rights? Like, what is the policy that you think he needs to be successful at and your prayers are gonna help him, but somehow that'll be the Lord's work? Like, get the fuck out of here, dog. You sound stupid. And someone's like, oh, well, they gotta do what they gotta do to get a check. It's not about a check, because these motherfuckers have black churches and most black people do not support Trump. So it's actually the opposite of a check. It's insidious. It's fucking, it's pathological. The fact that you would still feel this need to defend an open bigot and then in the name of Christ, the fact that you would do that is way worse than even people that sold out for a check. That's worse. Because when someone sold out for a check, I can see the numbers like, oh, this nigga just want a check. You're not even getting a check. The people in your audience go, I don't fuck with this dude. I hate that what he's saying right now. That's just some hatred. That's all that shit is. So yeah, 100 from me as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fuck, yeah. Donnie McClurkin.
Yeah.
It's just, it just speaks to a lack of empathy that we have as a country that's just pervasive throughout the country, to where especially it's disappointing for it to come from the black, like a black lead, somebody who has a platform like that, because, you know, that's civil rights and all that came from the church, like we were saying earlier. And then there's just people that don't care. If you've been oppressed, how can you not have, if you have that, the history of being oppressed in this country, how can you not have empathy for gay people, for Muslims and women of color? So it's just, I looked at, when I saw that, I was just like, man, you know, he's out of touch, and he's obviously a self-hate thing going there too. So yeah
like, this is the shit that makes, this is the shit that makes me scared of religion. You know what I mean? Cause like, it's not just like, I understand. And like I said, there's so many people that I know that are Christian that do so much good work.
Right.
Because of, you know, partially because of the reasoning of their religion. So it's not even that. Like, I don't want to be just, but it's scary as fuck that people can use the same book and the same words to just justify hatred, and they can still have a space. Like, they're not pushed out of the organ. Like, get the fuck out of here. You have to go join some other church that's a hate group. Like, you now need to be the fuck away from us. Like, no. Christians that aren't like that will still invite these people in, let them sit in the pulpit, let them lead the choir, and then go, yeah, but, you know, that's, you know, he means well, that's our brother too, that's, you know, it's, you know, not to go back to a topic, but it's kind of like the comedian thing with other comedians where it's like, I wouldn't do it, but Donnie was having a bad day. And it's like, no, nigga, this is bad. Like, when are we gonna say y'all believe the same thing, but you think he's wrong in the way he's doing it? Because there has to be somebody on the inside willing to be like, this shit wrong, you know, and this shit is wrong, period. I'm not on the inside, but it's wrong. I'm on the inside of blackness, and this nigga is wrong, and people believing in him are wrong, and y'all need to stop that shit. Stop praying for this fucking Satan in the White House, like he gonna wake up and his heart gonna grow three sizes like the Grinch. This motherfucker hates you. He hates you, dog. He wants everything bad to happen to you, and success for him is measuring how fucked up your life is. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's look. Oh God, I can't do this right now. We let's do some white people news, guys. I'm looking at all the other.
Let's have some levity. Let's
I'm looking at all the fucking. I just looked at the other articles and was like, no, Maxwell calling people, bitch. It's too much, guys. It's.
Yeah, cause, you know, like this was a black ass weekend for me. I mean, doing this podcast, I did Medium Popcorn and I saw the James Baldwin movie. Shout out to Miss Holiday on Twitter. She hit me up about the movie. She was like, yeah, you know, this movie is racism is exhausting. Like you have to, because like one of the things that James bought, like the onus is not like the onus is on us to, you know, try to be the best that we can be. And we done did all this stuff in spite of all the bullshit. But at what point will white people wake up and realize that the onus is on them to make the change really be what we need, because it's on them. Until they stop denying and stop this like gaslighting and this verbal judo that they do so well that we can easily see through, it's not until they stop. And it's like, and everybody's saying like, I thought that movie and I tweeted this, guys, that I'm Not Your Negro is the blackest made for white people movie that I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's not for us.
Right.
It ain't for us. It really is. It's a good movie. You should see it. But you ain't gonna learn nothing new.
Yeah, it's not for us to fix.
Right.
You know, that's the big lesson to all this shit that, you know, that's why I don't really go in on black people for how they voted. I don't go in on black people for how they live their lives and shit. Because for the most part, racism isn't a thing we even have the power to fix, and we definitely should not be the ones to have to fix it. Like, it was done to us, not something we propagated, so fuck them. Yeah. You know, it's like when people say, well, black people sold slaves. Yeah, white people bought them. What the fuck? Y'all ain't have to like take it to the next level, nigga. Like we was keeping it dollar store and y'all turned it into Walmart, man. Come on. The fuck? I'm supposed to feel bad about that too? Nah,
because we got franchised in.
Right, it's like we both did it. It's like we all own the Subway. No, it's not, nigga. It's not the same. All right, let's move into some white people music, white people news, and I'll start with a white people song. Here we go.
Things that make you go hmm. My girl's best friend had paid me a visit. Fly as can be, tight dressed and all. She knew that I was faithful and really didn't have the goal. I tried to chill, she made the move. Now I know my girlfriend wouldn't approve. I didn't realize my girl was setting me up. Yo, my girlfriend didn't trust me, no. Yup, but she lost control. Well, I wouldn't take the bait. I said, chill, baby, baby, chill, baby, baby.
Wait.
My girl busts in, caught us creating the boom. She said,
girlfriend, things that make you go hmm.
Things that make you go hmm.
Things that make you go hmm. Things that make you go hmm. That dude was like the safe version of Ice Cube. What happened to him? I mean, Ice-T. What happened to that dude? Like, they had that scandal, remember, where they had skinny women in the video, but it was a fat woman that sang all the hooks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, everybody dance now.
Yeah, they got...
Yes, I remember that.
They got sank by the first catfish scandal ever in music. Oh, my God. Man, what happened to them? Where's that dude? What does he do for a living? Mm-hmm. It's not like he had, like... Yo, what if he had crazy rap skills, though? I was just like... I was like, this nigga is terrible at rapping, but what if, like, you ran up on him and he just straight up could annihilate niggas with that same flow from that verse right there? That would be amazing. Your dress ain't corny. Looking kind of horny.
Your word would explode.
He was rapping like real pro black and shit like Kendrick, but he was rapping just like the same cadence though.
Like, what, did we go back to 1982? What's happening?
I know a lot of niggas that smile in my face, lie behind my back. Alright. George and Amal Clooney and her actor boyfriend, husband, as I like to say, are expecting twins, confirms Matt Damon.
Matt Damon?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Matt Damon told everybody that it was happening, guys.
Tom Brady of Hollywood.
How is Matt? Is it, are we sure that what's his name, Marky Mark's not the Tom Brady of Hollywood?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's got to be maybe like a 1 and 1A.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I think because Tom Brady won't. I mean, Tom Brady won't really. Shit, because Matt Damon was like, I mean, there's diversity in front of the camera, so we don't need anything behind.
Yeah, and then like Marky Mark has a secret history of like being racist to people and shit. And then he keeps starring in these movies about white people saving us from catastrophes and shit. So I don't know. It's 1 and 1A. I think that's I had never thought Matt Damon of that, but you're right. He's on the
I thought of it because when I saw the poster for the Great Wall and I went to go see the founder and I saw that poster, I was just like, damn, like he might be the Tom Brady of Hollywood.
Dog, the Matt Damon, I mean the Tom Brady biopic, who do you think is going to get to play him? You think it's going to be Wahlberg or you think it's going to be Damon?
JL said Wahlberg. Mm. I was thinking like Wahlberg. I tweeted after the Super Bowl that, you know, he said, oh, he left early. You know, I said, he left early to write the script. Because he knew something was in the air, so he left to do that. I would say he plays Edelman because he had the history of playing a dude in Invincible. I'm trying to think who you could get to play him. You probably get, I mean, maybe Ryan Reynolds to play Brady. Maybe Cavill maybe.
Mm.
Who's a pretty white guy?
You think what's my man from Limitless? You think he could do it?
Limitless.
You know I'm talking about? Pretty motherfucker. He plays the Rocket Raccoon in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh shit.
What is
I don't know the name of the guy that plays the raccoon.
He was in Hangover 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, fucking the Aloha dude?
Yeah. God.
Bradley Cooper.
That's why I love white people news. These three black people struggling to grasp one of the most famous white men in Hollywood. What? We all just like, who the fuck is that dude?
He played that raccoon, y'all.
I'm mad at myself when I fuck up any actor's name because I like, you know,
yeah.
But like, you know, when you think like, to me, and I don't know if I said this on your show before, but he's like, you know how you coined the impossible white man.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like the king of like, oh shit, like redemption, white man redemption movies. Like he's somebody that's fucked up in the past, that's trying to get it together, and he's likable, and then he eventually gets over it and wins you over. Mm. He's good at playing that dude. So he could definitely rock the Tom Brady.
Hey, he's a good ass actor too, man.
Mm-hmm. I think he is. Yeah.
He made me care about a raccoon dog.
Yeah, I didn't think he was that good at first, man, but like that motherfucker has picked some parts over the years where I've just been like, Bradley Cooper, even when he's not the focus, it just comes in and he's versatile and he's really solid. I know he just played a arms dealer in that Miles Teller flick. What was the
War Dogs? Yeah,
War Dog, and he was so good.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, he was Henry Garrard. Yeah, and War Dogs. Like I was just like, damn, Bradley Cooper's like a whole different person in this role. You know. Anyway, he good. But point being, they expected some twins, y'all. Justin Theroux wishes Jennifer Aniston a happy 48th birthday as he shares a rare selfie of the couple. So if you guys watch The Leftovers, Justin Theroux is the main star of that, and that piece of sweaty hunk is married to Jennifer Aniston, and he went on her special day on Instagram, and he posted a happy birthday. He said HBDJ. So happy birthday, Jennifer.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. His pithy yet sentimental caption included a heart emoji and a hug and a kiss. He shared a rare selfie of the couple, which showed the pair surrounded by palm trees. The sweet shot showed Justin and Jennifer's heads touching as they huddled closely together for the picture.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Right?
Meanwhile, on Instagram.
Now,
and it ain't ratchet.
Personally, I feel like it is a little ratchet.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Because this is clearly a shot at Brangelina as they break up.
Right. Oh, that's right. That's right, because that's right. Ex-girl. Okay. Right.
Look but at how,
it is messy.
Look how happy we are over here. This is not the first time he's taken an Instagram to sub.
Okay.
The sub pick, Brad. Brad. What? Pitt.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Not bad. Meanwhile, on Instagram.
Yippee-ki-yo.
Exactly. I had to do it right. I'm sorry. The first time, I was like, well, this ain't that ratchet, you know, but.
Mm-mm. No, this is clearly a shot. Justin rarely shows photos of him and Jennifer. Nearly a year ago, the Zoolander 2 actor shared a photo. Why'd they do that to him? Anyway, shared a photo.
I didn't watch that. I heard it was terrible.
they could have skipped it. He shared a photo of Jennifer looking out of the Eiffel Tower while they were in Paris for the film. That's them right there. While they were in Paris for Zoolander. And before that, December 2015, he shared a throwback shot of Jennifer from the 2013 Oscars for Women Crush Wednesday.
Oh, that picture is beautiful. The one you just scrolled.
Looking out the
window.
With that big ass ring on.
That's a beautiful picture of her.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this thing. This thing, girl.
This old thing.
This old ring.
I had this for years.
Girl. And this is Women Crush Wednesday with her in the red dress. Yeah. Yeah.
You better slay in that red dress.
Slay, girl. Go ahead. And that's them when they were there together at the looking perfect together.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That train. And she got a matching purse. Yes. Were your shoes red, too?
Yes. Jennifer, low-key, man. Jennifer be giving people looks, man.
Right. You
know? She bad, though. Like,
yep.
She was looking good in Horrible Bosses.
Right. Man, I'm telling you, man. She, I know black don't crack, yellow don't mellow, but, you know, she's holding it down for white folk, man.
Mm-hmm. There's a few of them out there that really get it done.
Charlize Theron.
Uh-huh.
Like that, have you seen the trailer for the Fast 8?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Oh, she's in that.
Yeah. Dog. I was like, she still looked young. Like
she looked the same with the woman, the braids.
That yeah. Like the subtext of that trailer very much feels like white girls evolving Instagram with the whole the way he leaving his family and his brown Michelle Rodriguez behind and kissing that white woman in the mouth. It did have some undertones, but she was looking good. I was like, look at you, Charlize. Every time I see her, I'm like, damn, man. Still holding it down.
Black Rob says Charlize African, too, though.
Yeah. she is African, though. Yep. So maybe it is black don't crack. I don't know. We have to see if she got some Black Lives Matter on her Instagram or something. Singing icon Pat Boone, 82, blasts Meryl Streep and Hollywood liberals and movie studios that are wrecking U.S. image around the world with their anti-Trump rants.
What? No, he don't need no help in wrecking his image.
That's what it is, guys. We figured it out. Man. The image was fine until y'all started talking about it in Hollywood.
He needs no help.
Show business legend Pat Boone has come out firing at stars who use award season to launch rants at the U.S. president and his policies. Boone, 82, lambasted Meryl Streep for her Golden Globe speech in January, where she denounced Donald Trump's ideology and accused him of mocking disabled reporters Serge Kowalski in his campaign. The Moody River singer said he feels that she refused to give Trump a chance, as well as saying Hollywood shuts out conservatives and is 99% liberal to the detriment of the nation's image around the world. Why is it always the bad actors that talk about how conservatives can't work?
I have a question.
Yes, Karen.
Hold on.
Okay.
I'm trying to get back. I got booted out.
Oh. Because I'm definitely have them on screen.
Okay. Wait a minute. I got to get another to see all of it.
All right, I'm going to keep going until you get your question ready. He spoke while arriving in the 25th Annual Movie God Awards. Movie God Awards? Them niggas got awards?
Movie God.
Right?
How old is
Do people
movie
still
God?
Go to the Movie God channel when every TV comes with a fucking built-in God?
They do.
No way. I don't believe you, Karen. That's a lie. Nobody just puts it on Movie Guide to see. Oh, I'll wait 5 minutes till it scrolls to channel 187.
That don't know how to use their remote control and all the other fancy features.
They must have the same viewers as CBS.
Of course.
Which celebrates faith-based and family movies. No wonder it's the conservative. This nigga at a conservative awards show talking about we don't get no spaces for conservatives in Hollywood. You stupid
Come
ass.
On, young. That's the same, like, White History Month shit.
Yeah.
It's so fucking tired, man. Like,
Oh, God. He has enjoyed 7 decades of stardom, claiming that many modern actors and actresses are destroying the industry by making degrading films simply due to their liberal views. Now, first of all, I don't think that award shows are the place to express some narrow political view, he said at this award show. Now, it's not narrow to her or to most of that audience, but to most of America who had elected a man that she detests and doesn't even want to give a chance to. It wasn't most of America, guys. Boone cited Trump's Electoral College victory and his voters' conviction that he's going to lead us into a more moral and more economic sound and military strong life. She doesn't want to give him even a chance, and she was acting like he was all but a criminal and depraved, and of course she got a big hand for it. How's he going to lead us into a more moral place with this pussy grabbing antics? I don't understand what people see in this man. He conceded, now she's a nice woman and a very talented woman, but I don't think that an award show in front of millions of people is a place to vent your spleen about somebody that you disagree with politically. It just was wrong. Have y'all heard the term vent your spleen?
No.
That's new, right? 19, does that word mean what he thinks it means?
19, what, 40, 50 phrase? I mean, he is kind of old.
You out here venting your spleen? For real?
I know.
You just gonna vent your spleen on my show.
I hang around with a lot of old people. I've never heard that phrase.
He dismissed the idea that her speech could have harmed her professionally, pointing out she's in the side of the career that applies it. Oh no, it's good for her. He noted that, in fact, there's some who will express those views knowing it may be good for them. In the industry, in Hollywood. Yeah, because liberals love liberals. They don't like conservatives. He said, conservatism can cost people careers. The actor that stood up at Trump when he was winning the nomination, though he's not that well known to the point that Boone forgot his name. He was speaking up for Trump and he had 2 film projects that were in the works. And as soon as he did that for Trump, those 2 projects were canceled because it was going to be liberals dealing with him and his projects. Does anybody know who he's talking about?
Mm-mm. No.
Hey, you want to know what's funny, man? In my mind, reading this quote, I felt like the, what's that old black man that be mad? Greg, what the fuck is his name?
Dick Gregory?
Dick Gregory. I felt the Dick Gregory.
Ah!
Huh? Huh?
Huh?
You know what I'm saying? Huh? Like, it felt like that between these. Like, he's like, this is his version of woke, where he's like, he was like, because liberals love liberals. They don't want, they don't like conservatives. It could cost many people careers. The guy, the actor, what was his name? Stood up to Trump, went, you see, let's see, it was, when he was winning the nomination. Like, you're like, damn, man, what, you struggling to get this out. Anyway, man, hopefully he dies soon. ATL white man still complaining about the world ain't good enough for him. Shut your rich ass up. God. Always complaining about something. I swear these whites. Here's one of my favorite stories for white people news. You Tanzanians complain a lot. Why don't you boil flowers and drink them? An African tour guide is arrested for giving fake translations of tourists' comments. Fake it till you make it, brother.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
They ain't gonna know. They out there like old girl with them rocks you put up your vaginas.
You talking about Lena Dunham?
No, remember we were talking about her the other day.
Oh, you talking about veggie eggs? Yes. For
I thought Regina Hall, she talked about that on Conan, I think.
Regina Hall do veggie eggs too? Don't spread no rumors, dog. Come on, man. Gwyneth Paltrow veggie eggs. Gwyneth Paltrow is the veggie egg person. She's a white hotel.
Yeah,
snow tap is how you like to call her.
She veggie eggs. She vacuum cleaning it out, steaming it. She doing all
steaming her vagina. What was the last thing? Clean sleep she believes in. That woman is a hotel.
It's like pelvic floor with egg.
And all the doctors are like, it's wrong. It doesn't work. Right. She's telling y'all bad information.
You do know your vagina is self-cleaning. You don't need to do this.
What's the difference between her and the don't eat alkaline niggas that be making YouTube videos?
Ain't no difference. Everybody trying to get your money.
She's just a rich white woman. She's saying the same shit that y'all be saying. And she gonna start calling herself Dr. Gwyneth Paltrow next. Yeah. What's up, internet? It's Dr. Gwyneth Paltrow. And I'm here to tell y'all, y'all need to get this clean sleep, okay? For $79.99, directly to me. A tour guide has landed himself in hot water after falsely translating a cheerful visitor's comments to make it sound like she was being rude about Tanzanians. A mobile phone video shows a female tourist enthusing about the country and the Tanzanian people, calling them fabulously wonderful. But the guide then speaks into the camera and claims that she said the locals are always complaining about being hungry. Oh man. he took the extra step of not just not doing the comments right, but he made her sound as bad as possible. Oh man, that's hilarious. Let me see if I turn this
My
up.
My visit to Tanzania has been beautiful, gorgeous. The people are fabulously wonderful and friendly. Greetings are always jumbo. Happy to be here. The land is beautiful, beautiful. The animals are wonderful.
Anasema Tanzania mnalia sana njaa. Kila siku mnalia njaa wakati mna maua nyumbani. Simchemsha maua mnywe. Anasema si vizuri kulia njaa.
The variety of animals and people you see is incredible, unlike anywhere else. It is just fabulous.
Anasema mnamuomba rais wenu apikie chakula. Kwani rais wenu ni mpishi? Angaikieni fanyeni kazi. Chemcheni hata nguo mle.
It will be an experience to savor for all of your life. It is fantastic and beautiful and incredible and just unremarkable.
Anasema muangaike na pembeni za nchi huko muache. Rais hawezi kutoka ikulu kuwapikia chakula. Hivyo mjipikie wenyewe.
They looked at her and smiled. So the country's tourism minister, Jumaine Mshembe, took exception to the mischief making and ordered that the guy be arrested. Yeah, I guess maybe tourism is a big money thing. So it's like, right, hey, you fucking with these white folks and it's actually costing us money.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I issued an order for his arrest on Tuesday. I can confirm that he was apprehended today at the main gate of Nabi Serengeti Reserve. The guy, who has not been named, worked at the Serengeti National Park when the undated clip was filmed. It's gone viral among Tanzanians who see the funny side. It is thought that the guy may have been mocking Tanzanian President John Magufuli, who last month called on people to stop complaining of hunger.
I hope they don't kill that dude.
I hope, right? Isn't that sad that we so ignorant to Africa that we like, I hope he don't get the death penalty. We don't know.
They don't know.
Might be a fine and a day in jail, yeah, and he might be on bail.
But we're just assuming
the worst.
Right. We hope they don't.
Just because they have Starbucks over there now doesn't mean that they won't get gullied.
I don't know. That's my American ignorance, is that in my mind, when you say Africa, I'm only thinking of either the best ladies detectives agency.
I missed that show.
The number one ladies detectives agency. Or I'm thinking of like Blood Diamond movies. Like, I'm not, like, there's no in between for me of just like a suburbs in Africa, because my ignorance is tainted through the lens of American exceptionalism and all the shit that we see from over there.
Yeah.
You know, which can't be real, right? It can't just be they overthrowing the government and Forrest Whitaker is cutting off people's legs, or the guys must be crazy, you know?
I'm like that too. I talked to when I worked with Trevor Noah, he and I talked about that. I was like, you guys have pizza? Really?
Bro, one of the most ignorant, I'm actually ashamed of myself. One of the most ignorant conversations I ever had was with my sweet mates from Trinidad and Tobago freshman in college, and they were my sweet mates, and I asked them questions like, do I have running water and shit like that, and they laughed because it was so stupid and ignorant and just, I mean, I was 17, but you know, I learned a lot about myself via them picking on me for weeks, which is just that was the dumbest shit I've ever said in my life. But I just, my America just paints everywhere that's not America as worse. You know, like, we'll send them bags of rice. That's, you know, like that. When it's like, people do that with...
drop grain from the air where you're from.
Yeah, people do that with Africa, too, where it's like, all of Africa is just one place and shit.
It's our xenophobia.
True. She says, hi, my visit to Tanzania has been beautiful, gorgeous. The people are fabulously wonderful and friendly. Greetings are always Jumbo. Happy to be here. The land is beautiful, beautiful. The animals are wonderful. He says, you Tanzanians complain and cry a lot about hunger. Every day you cry about hunger when you have flowers at home. Why don't you boil the flowers and drink them? It is not good to cry and complain about hunger. The variety of animals and people you see is incredible, unlike anywhere else. It's just fabulous. He said, you are asking your president to cook for you. Do you think your president is a cook? Can you get busy, even boil your clothing and eat? Tourists, it will be an experience to savor for all of your life. It is fantastic and beautiful, incredible, and just unremarkable. And the guy says, get busy in every corner of the country. The president can't leave state house to cook for you. You have to cook for yourselves. So he was making a commentary about the president, probably, and now this nigga got arrested. I hope he's gonna be okay, because that might not work out.
In his favor.
Right? You can't even talk shit about the president like over there. Money.
A biopic about that guy in the next 10 years.
Yeah, right?
Who's the Chadwick Boseman, I guess, we're playing?
Of course. I've actually been thinking of this thing I'm going to write on the Medium, and I'll just kind of break it here, but I'm going to do the top 10 black actors that could play in a Wesley Pipes biopic.
Oh, Lord.
I've got a list in my head, and that's Chadwick Boseman will be on the list just because that nigga plays everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Selena Gomez.
What about Trevante Rhodes, though, young? Got to put him in the...
Trevante Rhodes is going to be on the list, man. He might be a little too buff to play to play West, but he'll be in the top 10, I think. Like,
pretty motherfucker.
Yeah, pretty motherfucker. You get to the third act of that movie, you be like, this nigga.
I was like, am I gay now?
Right. This is a pretty motherfucker. I see. kiss him in his mouth. anyway, that's not Selena Gomez. The Weeknd hits a pre-Grammy party with a brunette who looks like his girlfriend. It's seen.
Did he get a stand-in? What's happening?
Yeah, apparently it was a stand-in, Karen. People were like, oh, is this nigga out here dating somebody that look like Selena Gomez? Now that's her right there, the dark hair and the black dress. Now I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't think she looks that much like Selena Gomez.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think she's just a brown woman with black hair, and they just went the same.
All right, we all look.
She's pretty.
She is pretty. Yes. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, now Selena's 24. This woman's 31.
Oh.
And she's actually his co-manager Tony Sal's 31-year-old wife Rima, who was Miss USA in 2010. The couple tied the knot last May in Lebanon, Tony's homeland. The 26-year-old Canadian songwriter and singer, actor, was he acting in?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
Maybe they know something we don't know.
I mean, I'm not saying he can't act. I mean, it's the same way I didn't know Janelle Monáe was an actor, and then Blood Al, you know what I mean? And record producer was surrounded by a crowd of people at the event, and Rima seemed to be pushed to the sidelines. Selena and The Weeknd, whose real name is Abel Tesfaye, were first spotted Wednesday, kissing January 10th at an Italian eatery, Giorgio Baldi, and confirming their long rumored relationship. The Weeknd, a two-time Grammy winner, is nominated on Sunday's awards for his work with Beyonce on Lemonade. So there you guys go. The Weeknd was out with a woman that looked like Selena Gomez.
Mm-hmm.
In other brave white women news, Lena Dunham has bared her midriff.
Oh shit! Yeah, yes,
this is what I like for her to be.
Karen prefers her to be in the white people news segment instead of fucking with black people.
I mean, she's over there because she's fucking with us, but right. I like her being covered for shit like this. Like this is what I want to hear about.
Well, apparently she's losing weight, and it's because Donald Trump got elected. She said she's shedding pounds in mass since Donald Trump's shocking election victory over Hillary Clinton. She wore an anchor gray sweatsuit with black stripes running along the waist and middle of the leg, with a black tank top with a red stripe and black shoes. She wore large hoop earrings and had her dark auburn locks and bangs up front and tied in the tails in the back. There you guys go. In all her alabaster glory. she.
Oh, shit. Alabaster glory. I like that. Oh, my God.
Her appearance at the. Yeah, I'm sorry, Chris. Her appearance at the Build studio came on the heels of an appearance of The View, in which she told the ABC panel, "I've been losing tons of weight ever since Trump got elected. In fact, I drop weight with every move he makes." By the time his only a white woman would be like, "It's been so good for my diet, though." Like, oh my God, the oppression. Oh my God, guys. Yes, let me tell you what it's been doing for my waistline.
To get fit just in case he decides he wants to grab my pussy.
I'm a size 5 now. Thank God for him hating Muslims.
And fucking up the country. I would have never lost this weight otherwise.
Right. I would have been so fat under Hillary Clinton. By the time his whole cabinet gets confirmed, I'll be down to my goal weight, which is my birth weight, 8 pounds. The Emmy-nominated star earlier this week opened up on her politically fueled weight loss during a Howard Stern appearance. I know what the right-wing media had a field day with that and said liberals so weakened that she can't eat food because of Donald Trump. But what I was trying to express is that it's been triggering for many of us in so many different ways. And I know that if I'm not hungry, then we have a real freaking problem.
Oh, God.
We have
shit,
a problem,
man.
Now.
Oh, man.
Not about the other stuff, but this shit right here.
Kids literally won't be able to eat.
Houston, we have a problem.
Bessie DeVos is going to cut off everybody's shit, but free lunch is over. In their appearance, Joy Behar praised Lena for breaking Hollywood's body image norms with her parading of sex scenes in various states of undress and on her hit comedy Girls as a normal-looking girl without the super slim look traditionally championed in Tinseltown. Lena admitted that the road wasn't always easy, and she had a very rude awakening at the way people initially reacted to her sex scenes on the show. Shout out to JL Covan. Stern in 2013 called Dunham a little fat girl who kind of looks like Jonah Hill.
Oh man.
God damn. Wow. Oh.
I wouldn't say that, no.
Right.
Oh,
can't be going at the ivory goddess like that. Added that she keeps taking her clothes off and it kind of feels like rape to watch. The shock jock walks. Yeah, he walked his remarks back shortly thereafter.
Don't say. No, and then she went on the show. Got up his ass.
Then he went on. Then she went on his show this year.
Right, to cover up his tracks. See, she's on the show, guys. Quit calling and emailing us.
It's interesting because you can be, as you said, a normal looking girl, and when you move into the realm of Hollywood, that in of itself shocks people, she told the panel. The fact that I'm considered quote unquote plus size or an example of completely unorthodox body, I have to admit it was very rude awakening. The first time I saw people's reaction to the show, I was like, I thought I was pretty banging. Dunham credited her parents, Carol Dunham and Laurie Simmons, for imbuing her with a positive body image early on in life. My parents always let me know that the difference was a beautiful thing, she said, and there wasn't a one size fits all. What if she's really losing the weight to try to get Odell Beckham Jr.?
Possibility.
She might could be.
Never know. Odell Becky Jr., what they like to call him. Dunham, an ardent Clinton supporter who campaigned on behalf of the Democratic nominee, said last April she had planned on relocating to Canada if Trump was elected. I know a lovely place in Vancouver. I can get my work done from there. She told Andy Cohen at the Matrix Awards, a ceremony to honor female standouts in the communications industry. I know a lot of people have been threatening to do this, but I really will, she said. But she's still here. The Golden Globe winner later took the remarks back. In the wake of Trump's win, she said she was willing to try to make things work despite Trump's Oval Office presence. I can survive staying in this country, to fight and live and use my embarrassment of blessings to do what's right, she said in an Instagram post. So she's not going to move after all, guys. So nothing good is coming of this Trump presidency. That's sad. Mm-hmm.
Damn. We get girls back this weekend, though. Girls is coming back.
I'm like three seasons behind now. I gave up on it.
Well, you nerds are watching Walking Dead. I'm going to be watching Hannah and her girls.
Well, at what point do they become women? Let me know, okay?
Probably by the end of this season.
It's like if they would have came out with Baby Boy 2. You know what I mean? Like, nigga, you a baby man now. Take some responsibility for your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah Messing. A revelation and a white starlet. Oh wait, no.
I'm about to say, who?
We're coming up with a different term, right? Have you come up with it yet?
Because this girl, like I was telling the homies on Media and Popcorn, like Zoe Dutch is a white starlet.
Right.
No, like Kirsten Dunst is kind of in the middle, and then Charlize Theron. What would she be? Like, would she be like aging, or would she just be like?
Season,
yeah, that's what Brandon was saying. So
I've been thinking about this, right? Since the ones in their infancy are the starlets, right?
Right, right.
So I think the ones in the middle should be the sons, and then the older ones should be the supernovas, because it keeps in theme with your celestial theme, you know what I'm saying? So like, your starlet is the young ones, then at some point they become their own sons, you know, maybe they have their own solar system around them and everything, and then as they fade, you know, a supernova, that a sun is brightest before it dies, you know. So that would be like how Meryl Streep is like a white supernova, you know. And you know, Emma Watson is no longer really a starlet, she's probably like a sun now. You know, yeah. Scarlett Johansson is like a son, and then you can still have your starlets for your younger ones. Anyway, something to think about. Deborah Messing says a director told her, your job is to get naked, in a 1995 film.
Okay.
Yep. Allegedly, that director, Alfonso Arau, pressured her to perform a nude scene and made disparaging comments about her appearance during the making of the 1995 film, A Walk in the Clouds.
Did she get mad?
Probably. I wonder why she's just now talking about this. Speaking at the Makers Conference in Rancho Palos Verdes, California on Monday, Messing recalled that the initial excitement about shooting her first Hollywood movie opposite rising star Keanu Reeves was marred by several humiliating incidents. On the first day of filming, Messing said she and Reeves were in the middle of a dramatic kiss scene when Aru interjected, "How quickly can we get a plastic surgery in here? Her nose is ruining my movie." After completing the scene in a daze, Messing retreated to her trailer and cried, "I felt ugly. I felt like garbage. I felt deep shame," she said, adding that Aru's comments reminded her of the anti-Semitism she experienced growing up in Rhode Island. Oh, I didn't know she was Jewish. Oh, that's even, like, he really went there then. On the second day of filming, she said she was browbeaten into shooting a nude scene despite having been told previously the movie would not feature nudity. When she confronted Aru about the scene, he allegedly told her, "I'm the director. It's my movie. Your job is to get naked and say the lines. That's it. You should be grateful to have this part." After grudgingly going through the scene, only Messing's bare back appeared in the final cut. She says the whole thing was a power play, a game, and the goal to demean me, strip me down to my pride and power, make me feel on a cellular level his dominance over me. I felt violated.
Right.
Her manager did not respond to a request for comment, but a representative for the filmmaker told 2FAB that Messing's description of the events was false. The representative said Messing was never nude during the scene in question and that Aru did not make derogatory comments about her nose. So, okay. I'm going to just keep it real. Why the fuck would she make this up in 2017 when this shit happened in 1995? Nobody's like, "Well, now we can give her a part in the movie." You know, like, there's no benefit. Like, I'm sorry. I believe her. I don't, like, there's no fucking benefit she would have.
Yeah.
To lie about this now.
And it's not about a good thing. It wouldn't surprise me if directors did spontaneously throw that shit up on people that they knew that they could do it to. Like,
it was her first film.
Right. You wouldn't do it to somebody that was established because you know you have a fucking lawsuit on your hands.
Also, the other part is your defense is just she made it all up. That's the defense. Like, there's a difference between, like, it was a misunderstanding on the set. You know, that director, you know, had some issues or something. Well, you just be like, bitch line. Like what?
Yeah. I don't think she could speak up back then.
Right, yeah.
And they said something about her nose?
Yeah, it said her nose was ruining the film because of the kissing scene because it was too big.
Right, and she's Jewish too. Right. So, you know, it probably kind of got in there kind of criticizing her because of that because you don't have the quote-unquote standard white nose.
Mm-mm. Fuck this.
Nah, she like one of these women that look like one of these white women that look better
as she got older. Mm-hmm. Yep. She also said she was in her monologue she said she was pressed to wear bra inserts aka chicken cutlets during her early days in the NBC sitcom Will and Grace. After threatening to take up the issue with the network brass, Messing said she never saw the inserts again. They want to make her titties look bigger.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe 100% too.
That's what make you funny. If you're a comedian and you're a woman, you being funny as an actress, you need to get them titties out there.
Right. So, you know, you happen to be not robust in the titty area.
Well, you ever be watching a sitcom and you like, this would be funnier with big titties?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, maybe it's just me and Chris. All right, guys. Let's get into... Let's move into our final segment, Guess the Race. And before we even do that, let me say, guys, maybe you've been dealing with some situations at work that are pretty stressful. Well, that's why our newest sponsor, Talkspace, is trying to help your ass out. If you ever thought about going to therapy but found it too inconvenient, too expensive, or too embarrassing to make it into an office, then give Talkspace a try. Talkspace is the online therapy company, and they want to make it easy to connect with a licensed therapist, handpicked just for you. For as little as $32 a week using Talkspace, you can text, audio, and video message your therapist as much as you want. Your Talkspace therapist can listen to you, vent about work, family, explore your relationships with the people around you, help you put you on a path to a happier life. To sign up and learn more, go to Talkspace.com/TBGWT. And as a special offer for the listeners, use code TBGWT in the coupon code section and you can get $30 off your first month. And show your support for the podcast. That's TBGWT and Talkspace.com/TBGWT. Talkspace therapy for how we live today. Now let's play the song. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all the podcasts, and we read and play news articles from all over the globe, and we ask our contestants today, Chris Lambert from the Mundane Festival podcast, to guess the race, and the chat room plays along, and they are racist.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen plays too, by the way,
because I can't see the screen,
and she's also racist. A single mom dresses up as a man so she can attend the Dads and Donuts event at her son's school. A single mother from Utah posted a photo of herself dressed up as a man for an event at her son's school, and the internet is loving it. Whitney Cottrell's Facebook post on Wednesday about her son's Dads and Donuts event shows a photo of her with a drawn-on goatee, a baseball hat, and a pair of sweatpants. She wrote, "When I became a single mom over 3 years ago, I made a promise to myself I would do anything I could, even if it meant going out of my comfort zone, to give my kids a quote-unquote normal life and some experiences as the same experiences as other kids. So this morning, I gathered up my best dad outfit, painted on some facial hair, and went to breakfast with my sweet son. I was so embarrassed, but I couldn't help but smile when he introduced me to his little friend, saying, 'This is my mom. She's my dad, too.' So I brought her." The post already has over 15,000 likes on Facebook, and she has been shared it over 8,000 times. Cottrell, a mother too, living in St. George, Utah, says she wants her children to know that they are loved. Some of her more normal accomplishments includes trips to lawns, teaching her son how to play catch, and killing bugs. As a single mother, she said, that is difficult letting children know how loved they are. She wrote, when I went to leave, he ran after me and hugged me tight around my neck and whispered, "Mom, I know that you'll always be there and do anything for me. Thank you. I love you." Kissed my cheek and ran off. I hope he remembers this day, because I'll never forget it or his sweet words. Aww. Guess the race of Whitney Cottrell, Karen.
White.
Karen's and going white.
I wish we were in the country where men could have this same freedom, where a man could say, "I want to dress up like a woman to go to my child's event," because it's like Mother Sunday. Mm. Because I have a feeling that if this was somewhat reverse, a lot of people would be liking that shit. They'd be like, "Something's wrong with this."
Yeah.
What, they would call that dude gay.
It wouldn't be as adorable.
It wouldn't be as adorable.
It'd be a lot of arguing.
Mm-hmm. I wish men, all jokes aside, had the same freedom to do this without the same visceral reaction out of people.
Chris?
White.
All right, let's check the chat room, see what they think. White, hotels would have roasted her if she was black. Utah white. White black school wouldn't bother to plan an event for five kids.
Aww.
God damn, Joe. Damn, Joe. Black mama would have showed up in her regular clothes like, "Eh?" Black folks don't live in Utah white. Even though it's Utah, the story includes absentee fatherhood, so I gotta go black because of racism.
Aww.
Says Black Rob. The correct answer is, everybody got it right, that said white. And one of you went black. And that's her picture. Did it come up, Karen?
Yes. Oh, that is cute. And another reason.
The kid looks black, though, don't he?
He looks mixed with something, right? Mm-hmm. Both her kids do.
Mm-hmm. And another reason why I picked right is because this article was written very friendly. Like, a lot of times when you listen to articles, like, if this would have been a black mother doing this for her children out of the same, you know, love that this woman had. And I think it's cute. I don't have a problem with it. I think that the article would have been written completely different.
You woke as fuck over there, this segment.
I mean, I'm not even saying
it's wrong. I'm just saying it's
pretty woke.
You over there, right? You over there about the black academic this up. She was like, "Listen, first of all, if the gender norms of a man doing this, and then secondly, if she was black, this is how it would have happened." I'm like, you right. I ain't saying you wrong.
That's why I picked white. Mm-hmm.
A man is accused of kicking and slapping a group of first graders playing outside during a recess at Gold Coast Elementary School, and he's been ordered held in lieu of $750,000 bail Thursday.
Get off my playground, you goddamn kids. Somebody was mad.
Tazewell Duggar, 46, got into the fenced in playground at Ogden International School's East Campus.
Oh, so he broke into the place
and began striking and attacking the children as he plowed through the playground area.
Holy shit.
You know, this reminds me of that scene in Don't Be a Menace where he started punching them children at the house.
Yeah, you want some? You want some? You on the playground getting some? You playing hopscotch getting some? You double dutching? Take some of this too.
Assistant State Attorney Lorraine Scaduto said during the bond hearing Thursday, the attack began about 11 a.m. Tuesday when Duggar hit and kicked a 6-year-old boy who ran past him, sending the child to the ground. Oh. He then kicked the girl and punched her in the stomach before slapping two other first grade girls in the face.
Holy shit, did he go in there? John Wick 2, kindergarten. What the fuck is happening here?
John Wick is Sunday school.
Right.
Oh, shit. So he slapped the girls in the face. They had been hugging and playing. School security was able to stop Duggar at that point. Prosecutor said he was arrested 2 blocks away, according to authorities, and no children were seriously hurt in the incident. Shit, they learned some life lessons that day. It's unclear what prompted the violent outburst, as if.
Doesn't even matter.
Listen, I saw them kids over there, and they were saying that Jolly Ranchers was better than Annihilators, and I said, fuck that.
Every morning I get up, these happy goddamn kids, I hand from my window, I've had it.
It's unclear what popped in the outburst. Prosecutors did say that Duggar showed up at Ogden's front door about 2 hours before the attack, asking for 2 children who did not attend school. According to Assistant Public Detector Wendy, was he going to fight him outside?
Meet me outside, bitch.
Where are Brian and Kenny? I want to talk to them about something.
Meet me outside by the slide.
Where's my money, Mikey?
By the merry-go-round, you know where it is.
Right. Catch me by the swings, nigga.
Right.
Duggar is a veteran of the U.S.
By the monkey bars.
Right. Yo, bitch ass. Little kid, think this is first grade? It is first grade.
I know. I didn't know we was fighting. Oh man.
Anybody else want some? Duggar is a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. Oh, he was Marine kicking these kids.
Oh, he got them kids a goddamn vinegar. You know he was extra strong.
Mm-hmm.
I live weights for a living. I can bench press your ass.
He's lived in Chicago for the past 9 months. He comes from St. Louis, Missouri. A spokeswoman from the Marines on Thursday said there was no service record of anyone named Tazewell Duggar. Fawcett said Duggar served for 4 years, more than 2 decades. Duggar is charged with aggravated battery to a child of criminal trespass in state land. Cook County Judge Donald Panarese Jr. on Thursday ordered Duggar held in lieu of $750,000 bail. Guess the race of Mr. Tazewell Duggar.
I'm going to go white because of that last name.
All right. What about you, Chris?
It could go either way, but I'm thinking white.
All right. The chat room says, now this sounds like a Negro colored black man. You're going to learn today, you little bastards. Duggar, white. Those boos were getting jiggy with it. Yeah, what you don't know, guys, is the kid stood up with 2 middle fingers, so he didn't know how to handle it. The reason why Eastside High chained his doors black.
Oh.
Major Pain. Oh! Making America Great Again stars earlier and earlier white and slapping 19 kids and counting white. Oh, God. Oh, that's so good. That's so good. Anyway, the correct answer is, and what most of y'all went white. Well, guys, most of you got it absolutely wrong. He was black.
Maybe it's the first name.
You got it way wrong, guys. Wow. He was a black man. For those of the few of you who got it. You get a golf clap for that kind of racism, guys.
Aww.
Did it show up yet?
Yes, it did.
Major Pain.
Yeah, he's yeah, it's pretty, I mean, he black as fuck, guys. All right, I don't know what to, like, there's no way to not see how black this nigga is. And he just looked like, yeah, like these motherfucking kids.
Oh, he had enough.
Got a nigga in jail.
I guarantee the kids were probably white. So he just was like, I'm going to beat up all these little white kids today.
Boy, you bet.
Probably calling them all niggas. They was like, I'm not a nigga, sir.
Look, hey, he must have thought he was James Earl Jones from the... Like they ball went over the fence,
right,
from the Sandlot and shit.
Oh,
James Earl Jones or Homie the Clown.
All right, last story, guys. Gotta go to the bonus round. All right, so far, Chris and Karen are 1-1. Let's go to the bonus round. Music. Double the points and the race. Double the points and the race. That's right. Double the points, double the race, and the bonus round against the race. So far, 1-1. But will they be able to break the tie? Who will come out on victory? We'll see. Also, bonus round against the race is brought to you by Bevel. Bevel's the first and only shaving system designed specifically for coarse, curly hair and sensitive skin. Step up your shave game and say goodbye to razor bumps. Check out getbevel.com/TBGWT and get your first month free at getbevel.com. That's getbevel.com/TBGWT. Don't forget, Nas is an early investor in the company, okay? A lot of you guys love some hip-hop. And you love Nas and you wonder what he's been doing. Well, this is a way to support him, okay? Mm-hmm. Valentine's Day is almost here, and many of you waited too late, okay? I'm going to tell you right now, the plan is you got about 2 days left. A lot of these women ain't have no dates. They will accept a late-minute entry, but you need to look your best.
You better.
You're going to want to be shaved up, okay? Make her an offer she can't refuse so she can still, because she still want to go on Facebook and Twitter and take selfies of her dressed up and talking about she went out on a date because to make the rest of these bitter women mad, okay?
Ah!
You see it all the time on social media. I don't, Valentine's Day sucks. It's trash. I don't believe in love. Oh, you want to go out with me? And then next thing you know, she's taking pictures. So just, you know, now's the time to strike and best to strike while looking your sharpest. GetBevel.com/TBGWT. Sorry to give away the game, ladies, but come on. You'll thank me when you're out on that date. Florida newlywed, 76 years old, confesses to shooting his wife in the butt because she wouldn't consummate the marriage.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the wrong kind of bullet you want near your butt.
Yeah, he definitely was trying to.
I was going to ask what was he shooting her with? What did he shoot?
I guess, you know. Shoot your shot, as they say on Twitter.
Yeah.
You must have wanted some ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, there are plenty of bullets, like I said, but that's not the one she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
7 months after saying I do, 76-year-old Florida resident Donald Royce was arrested after confessing to shooting his new bride in the butt after an argument over their sex life. Royce and his 62-year-old wife were bickering because she refused to have sex with him. When authorities arrived at the home, Royce immediately confessed, telling police, "I shot her and my gun is in my room." When questioned at the police station, Royce said he got married in August and had yet to consummate the marriage. Royce told police that he didn't mean to shoot his wife and was aiming for their mattress. The new bride is recuperating and calling the situation a nightmare.
Yeah, of course he was aiming to shoot the mattress.
But that's probably what she was wanting.
Well, I was going to say it was shaky-ass old man from New Jack City hands. Like, yeah. You know, like you shouldn't be holding a gun at all, Pops. Talking about shoot somebody. I was aiming for the mattress.
Yeah.
She was 62, man. This is the problem with Viagra. You 76, man. You supposed to be thinking about other shit.
You supposed to be accomplishing shit in life and doing all the shit that you didn't have time to do because your dick was getting you in all types of trouble. But you're like, nah, me and my dick gonna go at it forever.
I want to be rid of the curse of wanting sex all the time by the time I'm 70. I want like to be productive then.
Start writing them novels and doing all types of shit.
Yeah.
I was gonna say props to him for being able to
get it up,
make it happen, you know, get it up.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. We look at sexuality completely backwards. Like, no, that we shouldn't have Viagra anymore. It shouldn't have been invented. There was a time when you were going to be able to finally be able to see life clearly without these, like, I'm trying to get laid lenses.
Right.
And men just opted out of that with Viagra. It was like, nope, I want to go back to wanting sex all the time, making horrible decisions. Think about all the horrible decisions and time you wasted in the pursuit of sex, man. Who knows what you could be? You could be the George Lopez of black people right now, but you had to waste some time going on dates.
Who is the George Lopez of black people?
Kevin Hart. All right, let's go into... let's get these guesses of the race. Karen?
White.
Karen's going white. All right, what about you, Chris?
I'm going to go white.
All right, let's check the chat room and see what they believe. Not sure about this one, I'll go white. Black man with a quick trigger. Shaky his gun in the bedroom, white. Old white man, old black man to stay with a pistol. Well, solid reasoning. All right, the correct answer is, and Karen, Chris, you both got it right. He's white.
All right.
Some people did miss it. Shot to the butt. And you're to blame. What are you gonna say, Karen? I'm sorry.
I said, yeah, this is the makeup for the Duggar.
Yeah, he looks haggard.
Oh, he ain't have no business with a gun in his hand.
Right. Yeah. Or a penis, even. See? Nobody wanna have sex with that.
Right.
Come on, man.
Right. And the thing is, when women get up, we shut down and, you know, they trying to get us Viagra and men having a fucking fit. And you're like, well, we get so old, it ain't the same.
62 years old, she was done with the sex, too.
He should have went younger than 62.
Right, if he really wanted sex. He would need a lot of money or something, though.
Right, if you ain't got that,
I swear this is really how old people break their hips. They just keep saying that it's because they fell down the stairs. Mm-mm. It's got to be the hardest part about breaking your hip, having sex, is like you then got to make it all the way downstairs and lay at the bottom and pretend that's how you heard it until your kids happen upon you, you know. Life alert, I fell down the stairs. We'll be on our way, ma'am. Yeah, we got another old fucker emergency. Yep, too much doggy style. All right, guys, last thing, gotta talk about swords, because people keep doing shit with swords. So sword ratchetness, longest sound effect ever. All right, an 80-year-old woman was shocked to learn that a sword was hidden in her cane during an airport search.
Oh.
Yeah, one of these old sword-wielding motherfuckers and gave this gift to their grandma thinking it was cute and fun, and almost got hemmed up by the TSA or some shit.
I bet she loved that cane, too. Somebody was like, here you go, grandma. Oh, I love this cane.
Right, now she got to travel back to Florida with no fucking cane because of this nigga. All
right, you trying to be funny. Get grandma hemmed up.
Yeah, she was stopped by TSA agents. She was trying to board a plane at Myrtle Beach International Airport of South Carolina. Her cane was x-rays. Agents discovered that there was a long, thin saber that was hidden inside. TSA spokesman Mark Howell told the Sun News the woman had received the cane as a gift from her son and had no idea there was a sword hidden inside.
And I 100% believe that.
Yeah.
This is not the strain.
Yeah, according to TSA people, they say it happens a lot, actually.
Holy shit!
People pick them up at a thrift store, and the sword isn't found until we x-ray it.
Okay, because the owner that got it might not even know it has one in there. Or either they know, but just don't give a fuck because they want to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's not clear if she will face any penalties for this, by the way. All right, man.
I hope not.
I hope not as well. I think we can all agree. Listen, Chris, thank you so much for doing the show, bro.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
No problem. Guys, if you go see Chris, you know, Chris, where are you going up at, man? Where can they go see you?
All over the city, man. All over New York. I usually post the dates on my calendar whenever I got stuff coming up, and hopefully a couple of festivals in the spring, and we'll see what happens with these other things. But I'll just post everything as it comes.
And where's that calendar at?
Calendar's at chrislamberth.com.
There we go. Mm-hmm. And check out his podcast too, the Bud Day Festival, man. Does some of the best interviews in the game.
Yes. It's fun. It's a fun ride. And for those of you who have never seen Chris live before, it's worth every dime. If he gets down here or we get a chance to go up there, we would love to see you again, because I know it's been a hot minute.
Yeah.
But I can truly say it was a treat to see him live.
Yeah, y'all. He's so funny, man.
He is hilarious.
And I mean, I gave him double middle fingers because he was talking about Joe. Ah! And I said, "That's me, nigga, that's me." And then he was like, "Bitch, get the fuck out of here before I kill you." Yeah. And then
I will do that when I don't fuck around, you guys.
I said, "Oh, how far the show?" That's what somebody need to do, a viral video where they fake a comedian killing somebody. Like, somebody like, "Oh, fuck you, nigga," and then they just pull a gun out and shoot them.
Like Boy Scout, but with comedy.
Yeah. Like, before you clear up that it's a hoax, like, it'll go viral on TMZ for at least a day before you have to be like, "No one got shot, guys." But that would be awesome.
Pretend.
Right. Like, but the thing is, no one in the audience can be in on it. You see what I'm saying? Only the person that gets shot and the comedian can be in on it together. Cause then it'll go viral. Cause people be like, "Oh my God, there was a shooting at this comedy club." You know. Anyway, just an idea, Chris. If you need to go, you know, you feel free to use it. All right, guys, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.